Beagle Legends Mountain. Memory transcripts. Sir Lawyer Extraordinaire Apprentice. Date standardized human time November 18th, 2136. Benrick tapped his paw against the security door, stepping back to wait for an answer. If I listened closely, I could barely hear the sound of claws on tile as they moved toward the door. Yet before they reached it, they paused, then moved away. I wondered what she was doing as I moved closer to the door. The sound of pouring liquid, then gulping. A pause. More pouring. More gulping. Footsteps. Pause. Bouquet. They're returning to the door again. Nope, back they go. I need to speed this cycle up. Camera. A called, tapping the door again. Are you available? This is Sir Venric, and I were hoping to ask you a couple more questions if you are. The footsteps paused in their pacing, finally starting to move closer to the door after a moment. With a quick shove, it slid aside to reveal the grey-walled form of Camera, and oh boy, it looks like something has been going on. Her coat was much more ragged than when we last met. There were bags under her eyes, suggesting she hadn't gotten a proper sleep claw in some time. But most concerningly, her expression was free of that nervous energy it had previously held. Now, I would guess the closest thing to call it would be existing despite an annoying world. Squinting, the ears pressed down and clutching a coffee cup, she leered at the two of us, visible from her current angle. What do we want? Other eye all over stomach, trying to think of how it would be best to handle this. We were worried about you after hearing some stuff. Are you doing okay? Her eyes narrowed as she cocked her head at us. Well, stuff. Who's saying what? They thought once I gave you that drive you'd leave me alone. Her tone was much more gruff. This was like how she was when we said we didn't really like how coffee tasted. Why she was extending that same demeanor to us right out the gate, I had no idea. Well, we were able to use it. Thank you for that, by the way. Your partner actually just helped us find proof of her innocence. Any lassie should be free soon if all goes well. A look of confusion came over her features. My partner. WH. Suddenly the color drained beneath her furt, her eyes shot wide open, and the nervous demeanor we had initially been met with the pause prior returned. W8W indeed, why you say? I'm right back. F. Camera, gumshoe deadpan, leaning away from the blockage the door had provided her. What's that they were saying about a drive now? You didn't tell me nothing about that. Rather than just simple nervousness, an expression of sheer terror overtook her face, and the door had slammed shut in front of me before I could even react. I could hear the sounds of erratic breathing and unstable footsteps from the other side of the door, as if she was struggling to keep herself upright. Concerned, I pressed my head against the door and knocked again. Camera, are you alright? What's wrong? Camera's not here right now. She goes heat check somewhere else. Her muffled voice sounded from behind the metal barricade separating us. I was about to try and assure her, but I felt a pressure on my shoulder. In my periphery, I saw that Gumshoe had put his hand on my shoulder and was gently starting to guide me away. Seeing no reason not to let him have a shot, I stepped aside and allowed him full access to the door. He quickly stepped forwards and rapped his bare knuckles against the door a few times, much more forcefully than our knocks had been. Camera, come on, open up, will you? This ain't like you. Whatever's going on, I'm sure it ain't nothing. Too bad fellas out there only gotta do these jobs. Just let us in to talk, all right? I couldn't quite hear what was happening on the other side of the door, but eventually it cracked open just enough for us to pull it the rest of the way. Benrick and Gumshoe did so promptly, entering the darkened room with me not far behind. When I accidentally stepped on an empty coffee cup, I knew that things had definitely gotten worse since we were last here. Even though we hadn't known her long, to coffee cup being discarded like this felt like it would be her version of blasphemy. Reaching out with my paw, I searched for the light. When I found it, I was greeted with the sight of the office in disarray, but also no sign of Camera. I was looking around for her, as were the others, when a flick of light hit my eye. A cabinet door moved ever so slightly. We don't mean you any harm, I stated. We are worried about you. Goo, Mr. Campbell is worried about you. I lifted my ears to listen. They could hear breathing. I made sure to flip my tail to signal Venric that I had found her, pointing at the filing cabinet door. Could you come out and talk to us, please? While Venric and I's pawfuls were silent, Gumshoe unfortunately did not possess such stealthy qualities. His brown foot coverings clacked against the linoleum flooring, signaling our presence to Camera even as the words were leaving my mouth. I could just barely hear uneven breathing coming from the cabinet, so once we were a fair distance away, I stopped Venric and Gumshoe so she wouldn't have a case of triggered instincts. Was at least I tried to do that. Gumshoe simply ignored my attempts at halting his motion, barreling through my arm and kneeling down in front of the cabinet. The breathing stopped and he hovered his hand on top of the handle as if thinking whether or not to open it. Hoping to sway him to the latter, I hissed at him to try and get his attention, exaggeratedly shaking my head in a nonverbal cue for no to ensure that he understood. And even though he looked back and clearly saw my attempt, he took a breath and opened the cabinet anyway. I'm not being held responsible for anything this time. Its eye was a curled-up form of camera of her tail tucked tightly between her legs as she held them close to her chest. There were obvious signs of tears-discolored streaks running down the sides of her face as she looked up at us as if she had committed the murder herself, which I'm fairly sure she did probably. "Hey there," Gumshoe asked, a tenderness in his voice being present that I hadn't yet heard from him before. "What's going on? You hidden out in a cubby ain't exactly normal behavior from you. East from what I seen, don't gotta know what's going on in your after hours." The levity that he tried to inject into the situation fell upon pinned ears as camera looked up at us, an undeniable expression of guilt present on their features. It would make sense if what Sash told us about her speaking with Calder recently had any merit to it. But would she even think of him as a possible suspect? "We only figured that out after our meeting with her." Camera's mouth opened as if to say something, but all that came out was a whisper. A paw flew out and grabbed the cabinet door, pulling it shut again. "PL, please go away," I heard her cough. "You can't be here now. You can't be here now." Gumshoe's expression shifted to confusion, looking back at me and Venric for any support he could find. "Who can't be here?" Venric asked. "Is it me and Searle?" "Yeah, they can head out if you want," Gumshoe added. "We can talk when they—" "No. And no, you need to. Why, you need to go too. It's not good for you here. Your job is at risk. I'm sorry." "What?" Gumshoe asked, sitting back so as to give Camera some space to come out should she so desire. "Look, I know that I got my pay cut, but that was my own fault, not yours. What's got you acting so squirrely?" He looked back at us for a brief moment before an idea flashed in his eyes. "Didn't these two say something about a drive you gave them?" Camera whimpered and tried to close the door again, but this time it was blocked by a large hand. "Camera, if you got something you need to tell me, I'd like to hear it. A man was murdered, and if I can help these twos back there find out who did it, I'm gonna. Please." The room was silent for a long time as Camera decided what to do. When I saw her look over Gumshoe's shoulder at us, I flicked my tail positively. Even if our first impressions with one another had been rough, I was fairly confident in Gumshoe's goodwill. Besides, if what she told us was true, then it wasn't like she had much of a choice in the matter. Finally, Camera took a breath and steeled herself, ready to finally come clean. "I'd the day of the murder, I was W watching those cat videos while you showed me. I didn't even get a G good look at the screens. T then less than a sea claw after it happened, her estranged portrait showed up on my desk with a note. It there said that if I didn't P plug it in and leave the R room, that the V videos would be leaked T to the management S staff." She coughed to clear up her throat as tears started to form around the edges of her eyes. "I did W what it S said in, and then when I see came back, almost all the F footage was erased. I didn't I mean for I didn't W want this to I." She closed her eyes as a few drops fell. "It's my fault that any lassie was framed, I just know it. I was just too much of a coward to disobey and cake heap the footage. I'm sorry, I'm so sorry." With that, she ended up breaking down completely, curling in on herself once again as she started to sob like she had when Venric had pressed her before. I felt a well of guilt rise in my heart at her reaction, knowing that I had been the one to urge her on this time. Not Venric, not Gumshoe, but me. I knew it was necessary both for her to purge her own guilt and for us to ask her questions related to Caldenet, but it still stung to be the one to push her over the edge. I expected Gumshoe to be angry with her for this, or at the very least severely disappointed. After all, it was her erasure of evidence that had led to him making a fool of himself in the courtroom, and it was on her for delaying the evidence of trial by inadvertently deleting a number of camera feeds that could have possibly helped us exonerate her faster. But instead of shouting, instead of using a stern voice, instead of even looking at her funny, Gumshoe simply reached into the cabinet and gave her a tight hug. "Hell, this ain't none of your fault, Camera," he said as she continued to cry in his arms. "This whole mess gotta be on me, if anyone. I showed you them videos without even thinking about what I was doing. Should have been that I was shit back off the earth after that, but you actually licking M wasn't something I was prepared for. If you hadn't been watching them videos, you'd have probably seen a killer. If anyone's gotta be apologies in here, it oughta be me. Boo, but it is my fault," she whimpered. "People have found out about it. Others came out and they could tell the other humans. And then W, whatever happens to you will be all because of me." "It wouldn't," Gumshoe started to say it. "But it would." Camera bleated. "It was me begging you to see those videos that got you to bring them over. It was me who kept asking for more. And now people are noticing and they're going to report you for violating that emergency order and you'll get arrested. All because of me." My ears rose. An emergency order. I had heard passing references to the humans having something like that in place, but I hadn't been able to look into the specifics, something I was about to rectify. "Excuse me, sorry for butting into such a volatile moment, but what exactly does that emergency order entail?" Gumshoe's shoulders fell as he looked back at me, his eyes flicking in uncertainty. It's that thing to make sure none of you think we're evil and all. Load of baloney if you ask me, but I ain't the one makin' the rules. I think I can clarify, Venrick stated before I chanced to consider the meaning my translator spat out for Baloney'd Emergency Order 56, essentially a species-wide sensor order. Ran across mention of it after I defended that drunk human a while back as I had a UN officer contact me worried they had blabbed about some of the more problematic bits of human culture and entertainment during their inebriation. And if I understand, Camera is saying her cat videos would count as a violation of that order, as images and media of other companion predator animals is forbidden per the order. That sadly makes a lot of sense. Seeing as Gumshoe knew exactly what it was, I doubted that he could plead ignorant. Neither could he plead his case as a passive character, seeing as he was the instigator in showing Camera the pictures and videos from what I understood. Legally, if word of this got out, there was only one way it could end: indictment of Gumshoe and whatever punishment awaited him in the human legal system thereafter. But for her to be worried over this meant that somebody other than us knew about it. Time to see if our best guess is anywhere close to true. That is a tricky situation legally, I admitted, Camera's expression only worsening as I did. But that's dependent on somebody outside of this circle obtaining that information. Tell me, has anyone else expressed any sort of knowledge regarding the prohibited media? Camera looked unsure of whether she should tell us anything, glancing up at Gumshoe. Upon a shallow nod on his end, she swallowed a lump in her throat and took a shaky breath. Why, yes, just before you all see came, actually. AD, don't think I've ever seen him before. I think I'd remember that W weird head covering he had on. Venrick's ears shot up, the two of us sharing a look as our suspicions were ever closer to being confirmed. Wait, the head covering? Was it perhaps semispherical in shape with an asymmetric brim extending out over the face? Venrick asked as I waited with bated breath. Camera's demeanor changed quickly from saddened to shocked as she looked between us. WHS, actually. HR, did you know? I turned an eye to Venrick. Him. Venrick hissed. What did he tell you? What exactly did he say? Gumshoe appeared concerned as Camera divulged her previous conversation. It didn't start out as much at first. He was tea-talking about care of a patient he oversaw in the vegetative state ward and I was laughing along. Then out of the blue he asked if any of them caught the yarn recently. I tried to play it off like I didn't know what he was talking about, but he kept going into more details. He knew then right before he left he advised to make sure the doors were kept locked. I don't even know how much coffee I've drunk since then, but it's the only thing that's helped me think through everything. How much have you had? You're shacking like a malfunctioning washing machine, Gumshoe asked. About 17 cuts, I think. I stopped counting after a while, Camera responded, much to the shock of her human acquaintance. 17. It's a small miracle you're still breathing right, he exclaimed, which only caused Camera shaking to worsen. We ought to have you checked out for a caffeine overdose before your liver or whatever you sheets got gives at. No, please, I'm fine. This is more important. You could lose your job. Camera insisted, tears starting to well in her eyes again. And you could have your heart exploded, Vemic chastised. I haven't seen it personally, but a client of mine told me about how a friend of theirs overdosed on human caffeine drinks. At least you did it in a hospital. We will have to get you to a doctor as soon as we can. He paused just so long as it's not a doctor named Caldenet, right? Camera jerked a little, but her ears flipped to the positive. Why, yes. They're the one who talked to me. My mouth opened to speak as everything came together. And the one who blackmailed you that day. The attention was now instantly upon me. Fenwick's tail wagged. You're fast, a good trait. Camera was still shaking. But how could he? He only came here recently. A consultant. He wouldn't even have the keys to get in here and leave that thing. More like he shouldn't have the keys, Fenwick corrected. People can be a lot sneakier than you think. Speaking from experience there. I'm definitely going to have to talk to him about that later. If this is true, I can only think of one reason to blackmail you, I stated, but the only way to remove the power of blackmail is to reveal what is being used on your own terms. But if I do that, Campbell will be shipped off to Earth. She protested and hugged Gumshoe hard, much to the burly human's surprise. He seemed hesitant, but rested one of his arms on her back and gave it a pat. Look, Gumshoe offered, maybe there's a way around this, yeah. I could figure out something to stay. Maybe special privileges. Trying to get you eased into our more scary stuff to accept with them cat videos. Oh the fuck, there's gotta be something. He was stuck in thought for a short while before suddenly leveling a finger at us of all people. You two, these are both lawyers. Ain't there some kind of loophole I can exploit here? We're lawyers, yes, I admitted, but we're trained specifically for Venlil law in Venlil courts. I can't speak for Venrick, but I haven't read anything about how you humans prosecute or how your laws work. For that, you'd need someone familiar with human law. Perhaps once we're done with this case we can provide some consultation, but I'm afraid the matter is largely out of our paws here. I can't really say either, Fenric added with a pause. Though it's possible that you two could get some leniency. Leniency? Camus stammered. How? Well, I'm not exactly an expert here, so take all I'm saying with a grain of salt. But from posts I have seen on Bleat and how I have seen some of my clients behave, humans who enroll in the exchange program seem to have somewhat laxer rules on that emergency order. Lax rules? A asked in confusion. But the exchange program is all about the humans trying to put their best face towards us. Wouldn't that group have the strictest regulations on what they can and can't say? On paper maybe, but in practice the main focus seems to have shifted toward showing humans and Venela able to interact together as equals and friends, Fenric stated. They don't think the program would be able to succeed if the humans had to act completely perfect in every moment of every pore. That would cause way too much stress or even result in pairings regressing into toxic relationships. And with the paperwork Taraham that one of my clients signed, there's an acknowledgement that Venel might be exposed to predatory ideas during the process regardless. Again, no guarantees, but there might be some protections in place to keep Gumshoe from being fully prosecuted even if it was discovered that he showed her those videos. Camera's expression was like someone who had been wandering in the burning for a port and just caught sight of a full water bottle. So Richard would be okay. He wouldn't be taken away. As much as I wanted to assure her that was a case, I simply couldn't, not just on account of not being sure myself, but also because there was still our matter of coming here in the first place. Maybe, but until this case is pulled, we just won't have the time or resources to make certain of it. On that topic, is there any chance that you would be willing to testify as a witness in this trial? Camera seemed unsure, and for good reason. If we were wrong about the leniency surrounding the exchange program, that could result in deportation for Gumshoe. Seeing as such, she turned her attention back to the human who still held her loosely in his lap. I don't know what if. Gumshoe understood the question and after a moment's hesitation shook his head. Look, this is my mess to clean up, not yours. What happens gonna happen, ain't no guarantee that this Calder guy is gonna keep clammed up even if you keep your end of the bargain. If there's a chance to catch the real guy behind all of this, I say take it. You're sure? Camera asked, with Gumshoe responding with a firm nod. That seemed to be all the confirmation she needed as she soon turned her attention back to us. Hey, alright, I'll do it. Jay, just let me know a peep or so ahead of time there so that I can call in sick. Thank you, Camera, I replied, ducking my head respectfully in place of an ear lowering. We will be certain to let you know when we need you. Before we leave, is there anything else you could tell us about your encounter with Caldana? Anything at all? Well, I think he mentioned talking to a Sifkit earlier, and I thought he said to me was bad. I don't even want to know what he said to them, she admitted. Fenric and I looked at each other again, him giving an ear flick to my tail flick. We knew exactly who that was, or at least I did. Seeing as we had managed to delay Enilas's trials, he was likely making the rounds to try and silence anyone we talked to previously. Hopefully we can convince him to testify as well. We will look into that, Fenric stated, rising from his seated position. Thank you for your cooperation, Camera. She rose to her feet, signaling thanks as she turned back to her desk. As the rest of us were making to leave, I saw in my periphery her pausing. She turned an eye towards the screen and she adopted a confused expression. Hold on, what happened to those vending machines? I followed her gaze and had to hold myself to not bleat in surprise. The screen showed the vending machines Fenric and I had Gumshoe open in the ground floor cafeteria. Their doors swung open, completely empty of their contents, with the tables of the cafeteria all filled with happy people chowing down on their recently plundered meals. But that wasn't the problem. Where the electronics had been now held dangling wires on what looked to be frayed circuit board, the machine itself being completely dark. Fenric uttered, realizing we had gotten too distracted with Sashf to close the machines. Which meant that. Oh, shit. Legal Legends 20. Memory Transcript, Fenric Lawyer Extraordinaire. Date Standardized Human Time, November 18, 2136. I stood in the cafeteria and stared at the disaster before me. The tables were crowded, people of various species eating and chatting. It was a perfect picture of a common meal break if it weren't for the fact that those meals all came from a pair of empty vending machines. A whole crowd, I heard Sol murmur, looking at the recording on her pad. They just stampeded the thing. I huffed, desperately wishing to head but something right about now. It would have been so easy if the video had gotten a clear image of who tampered with the thing. It would have been clear proof. We would have been able to use a predatory turn of phrase, hunt down the culprit. But no. It's never that easy. The first thing we had done upon seeing the damaged machines was to roll back the recording. It appeared that for the local pore cycle of the hospital, the major shift's mealtime had started while Searle and I were dealing with Sashf. We got to see a manager of a herd wander in, several people stopping in confusion at the sight of the doors hanging open. While the microphone didn't get any distinct voices, the way the herd shifted and fidgeted showed the people were talking to each other, than certain what to do. That was until a Sithgit had walked up and grabbed several meals. I knew the economy of the planet was struggling. Prices were fluctuating fast, and the first and hardest hit was the price of food. Basically everyone was doing whatever they could to make a credit stretch. So when a gluttony of a Sithgit was displayed, it wasn't long before the machines were practically mobbed. I had to have replayed that video 5 times now, Searle lamented, but the quality of the camera and the density of the crowd didn't let me get a good view of the open machines. Did you at least make note of the Kolshins in the herd? I asked. Yeah, both of them, she affirmed. Both were wearing a full scrub over their head fins, too many people around to get a good look at their bodies at all. Scrubs. Of course the hospital needs to reduce potential for contamination or contagion. So fur and skin covering outfits were prevalent to the point that the humans didn't look out of place with bare garments. But that also meant that any potential distinguishing marks were hidden from sight, letting the culprit get away with it all again. Rocking fucking Sogalik, damn it all. I pinched the bridge of my snout, letting a stream of pressurized air pass between my teeth. Complications. Always complications. Boo, but we're still okayed, aren't we? Searle asked. We still have a copy of the recording. Not to mention the records of her purchase. Shouldn't that be enough for her alibi? I wish it was, I huffed, but part of the process in sending it off to the record is verification. We have a copy, yes, but without the original we would have to have it sent off for digital analysis to look for any possible signs of tampering, manipulations or edits. Not to mention a data expert giving testimony to the film originating from a vending machine. It would be a process that would take way too long for our purposes. Searle tried to counter with something, but all she succeeded in doing was her best impression of a poor puppet. Eventually the reality of the situation hit her as well, and she leaned on the nearest table. So that's it then. That's all it takes to make this entire trip for nothing. I huffed. As hard as it is to say, we might have to refocus on winning the actual trial rather than completely getting any lassie off in this pre-trial. Like, we were so close. I shook my head in anger, staring back out at the chattering staff at their tables. Could any of them have noticed the damage? Would they have cared to notice? I didn't know. And worst of all, I had no idea what to do next. This was supposed to be what we were working towards, our last shot of ensuring that any lassie wouldn't be tried for a crime she didn't commit. But now it was all ruined thanks to the actions of one gluttonous Sithgit. One that's probably long gone by Enstatic. Searle asked to herself, but I was more than able to overhear it. I perked up and looked in the same direction that she was, only to find the orchestrator of our demise a few tables over in what was a blind spot of the camera. They were chowing down on a salad, and not their first one by the looks of the empty containers littering the table. The exact containers from the video. I immediately began marching towards him. If he hadn't had his face so stuffed, he might have sensed the danger he was in. But he was just too busy doing what Sithgits do best, raise clean all vegetation. Do you realize how much trouble you're now in? I growled behind him. His hackles raised in alarm as he jumped away from my voice, spilling what was left of his most recent meal in the process. Wahoo. Don't play dumb with me, I know it was you who took the first meal from the open vending machine. I shouted, towering over the fallen Sithgit. You're the one who let the culprit swoop in and erase all the evidence. Do you have any idea how much you've cost us? The evidence. I don't, he started, but just as quickly stopped as recognition flashed in his eyes. I saw Searle approach in my periphery, but I couldn't have really cared less. Searle, you gotta help me, this guy's insane. She sighed next to me, an amused expression on her face. It's good to see you again too, Static. Unfortunately, the insane guy is my boss and everything he's saying is true. The Sithgit Static looked between us for a brief moment before slowly getting back onto their paws. True. What? What are you talking about? I'm talking about the vending machines, I huffed, the ones that you stole all those salads from and encouraged everyone else here to do the same. The cafeteria quieted a bit at my words, those having been louder than I intended. I saw a few Venil and Zorulin surreptitiously moving their meals out of my lines of sight, with even more flicking their tails nervously, none more so than Staxit before me. Wove hate, I took 3 containers because they were free. The doors were wide open and I thought the XDC was finally giving us our due. I wasn't even the one to take the most meals. I rolled my eyes. Oh, the meals are the least of our problems. It's the fact that their electronics were ripped out during the frenzy set off, and we don't even know when during the frenzy it happened or who did it. Oh, it was about 3 minutes after that Zorulian wearing the grey striped scrubs got the last jellied fruit jar from the back. A Kolshin man grabbed the board and yanked it out while the Zorulian was wrestling with a sun-brown Venil for the jelly. What? My train of raging thought had completely derailed. A was tempted to believe that this was nothing more than a hoax to throw us off his back for his error, but the way in which he delivered the information was nothing short of methodical, as if he had been preparing for this exact outcome even when I knew based on his earlier reaction that he certainly had not. But that didn't make any sense. Certificates were known for being dull and forgetful. Sylve, verify his claims, I ordered before turning back to Staxic. If you're wrong about this, I will ensure that you're held accountable for the egregious loss of property this branch has endured. It will at least be some recompense for what you've already cost. Of cost. The Certificate shifted in his seat, ears flicking in confusion. I already told you this stuff was free. Food costs have shot up, I'm not going to ignore a free meal. Wh, why do you even care about my food? A took a deep breath, trying to keep my anger in check. I know we couldn't have any idea about what was lost. I'm not talking about the food. I'm referring to the circuit board that Koshin ripped out. That contained original recordings from the day of the murder, recordings that would have been able to ensure our client absolved of any notion they were involved. At my mention of the murder, Staxic immediately perked up. Wait, you don't mean the one with the methanol bag, do you? When I wordlessly flicked my ears in response, he finally seemed to realize the ramifications. Oh no, the one who snatched it was the one responsible, yes. That would make the most sense. I am in a building with a murderer. Realizing that we were dangerously close to him starting stampede, I rushed to calm him. Even if that's the last thing I'd rather be doing right now. If he has any sense, he's long gone from the premises by now, and with what we know, it's probably not a traceable route. That seemed to relax Staxic enough, just in time for Sel to shove a pad in my face. Look here, right where he said it'd be. She pointed to the screen hovering over a nearly indiscernible smudge on the screen that was close to a small group that appeared to be fighting over a container of snack jelly. When she pressed play, that same smudge moved through the crowd and hovered right in front of a machine right before the body shifted to block our line of sight. Shortly afterwards, the jelly just slipped out of the wrestling pile and the herd moved to catch it, revealing the now vandalized machine in its current state. Solgalik willing, the Certificate was actually right. In truth, I hadn't accounted for that possibility even as I had acknowledged it. It was preposterous to assume that a Certificate of all species would possess such a photographic memory, but since when had anything been in order these past few months? He was likely the mental equivalent of Tarlin for his species, which despite his apparent skill in memorizing details quickly would put him about on par with the average Fenlil in intelligence. But for now I had to press the advantage. The person we are looking for is a Koshin, one who works here. Were you able to discern anything to distinguish them from the others? I asked, looking for any details that might match our culprit with the one we suspected of being behind all this. Oh, they don't work here, Staxic immediately stated, returning to his seat once he realized that we weren't a threat to him. This place hasn't hired them, so they don't work here. Then could you explain what exactly he's doing here? Sir prompted, we have evidence of him interacting with a patient and administering care, so they have to be employed here. The XDC wouldn't just let some random person off the street do things like that. She paused briefly before amending her earlier claim. More than once. I'm sorry, who are you talking about again? Staxic asked, tilting his head. They thought we were talking about the guy who was taking the board from the machine. I had to stop myself from plunging my paw straight through my snout. Of course I'm expecting too much. Kaldanath, we're talking about Kaldanath. Is that his name? I don't interact with him much, just he stopped in the middle of his sentence and looked dead straight at me. Did he say he was interacting with the patients? Like directly interacting. Alone. Yes. How else would he have been able to? I started, but I was immediately cut off by the most frustrated Certificate I've ever seen. Does nobody follow protocol around here? First they leave their spay all over the place, then they allow random external specialists to act as general physicians. It's like they don't even care about the code of conduct they all signed up under. XGC Branch Doctrine Chapter 4 Patient Care Conditions and Manners of Section 22.1. Only medical professionals licensed by the XGC Local Magistrate or the Exterminators Guild may act as general practitioners to instigate initial direct meetings or administer care unprompted. All exceptions must receive explicit permission from a higher-ranking member of staff, including for specialized care. If I was stunned before, that entirely floored me. I was still tempted to believe that this was another attempt to spew nonsense in the hopes that we don't press the issue further, but that language was far too precise to come up with on the spot. And he still wasn't done. The course of action permitted for authorized specialty practitioners is listed in subsection 22.7. Upon completion of an exception form, the specialized care may be dictated by a professional with regular updates from the nursing staff as to the status of the patient and any treatment plans enacted by said professional to monitor for any regressive effects of the treatment and/or medication. And even that is limited up to until the responsibilities are transferred over to the floor's head doctor until full recovery. The Sifkas stood on their hind legs, raising themselves straight to be at eye level with me. There should be no reason for a specialized practitioner to professionally interact with just any random patient and give advice. It is completely out of their jurisdiction. After that point, though, he seemed to deflate a little before sinking back into his seat. Of course, though, nobody reads the damned protocol document, leaving me to be the field sutter. Shocked, silent in disbelief, I looked back to Searle to ensure that she heard everything I did, only to find her staring at her pad eyes wide. Curious, I leaned over to get a look for myself. On it were the exact subsections that Staxic had mentioned, and they were exact matches. Word for bracking word. Perhaps I have been a bit too conservative with the magnitude of my estimates regarding Staxic's status as an outlier. But those considerations would have to wait. As he was speaking, I realized something, and I wanted to confirm it now. So you're saying that Caldana wasn't authorized to be treating any patients that he didn't have explicit permission to? Yes. Finally somebody gets it. Staxic cried. If your Caldana is the specialist I'm thinking of, they aren't supposed to do that. So that would mean any instance of him interacting with a patient outside his jurisdiction would result in penalization. They continued on. Yes, in accordance with subs. Nope, not that again. The condensed version, please. I requested. Staxic seemed somewhat perturbed that we didn't want to hear every minute detailed, but he complied nevertheless. In a few words, yes. He could even be disbarred from legal medical practice if you have the testimony of both the patient and an accompanying staff member confirming your claims. I flicked my tail in confidence. And do you think you might be able to identify this person if you saw them? Even if they were in their full scrub uniform? Staxit opened his mouth to respond, teasing us with useful information. If we could get any kind of direct connection to Caldana, we can. I wouldn't answer that yet if I were you. My wolf fled. I knew that voice. Why were they here? Why did they need to be here now of all times? I reluctantly turned my head until the black and brown forms of Ypilin and Clivus fell into my view. That's quite the leading question there, Vemric. Ypilin tutted, if you're planning to bring in another witness, that question is something that would need to be saved for court. Wouldn't want to face down an objection, tilde. Ypilin still greeted calmer than I could have possibly mustered at this point. To what do we owe the pleasure? If possible, could you wait to discuss what you wish once we're done with this? It's quite an important arrangement. Oh, I don't doubt that for a second, Ypilin purred, but that ties into why we're here. You see, we've heard of a certain someone here who might be vital in ensuring justice gets delivered, and that someone is precisely who you're talking to now. As our collective attention simultaneously turned back towards Staxic, the Sivka tilted his head in confusion. Who? Wait, why are you all looking at me now? My good sir, I'm referring to you, of course. You were the one to initially report the methanol bag missing, yes? Ypilin asked, to which Staxic eagerly signaled back in agreement. My enragement at their presence was somewhat broken when I caught a glimpse of Searle's expression. She was terrified. At first I was unsure of what could be causing that, but then I thought back to what Staxic had punctuated his rant with. Of course, though, nobody reads the damned protocol document, leaving me to be the field sutter. He's underappreciated in his position, and Ypilin's MMO is flattery. Something that would be near unknown to Sifkit. Me? I, you know about me. And it's not a complaint. Staxic said, the disbelief in his voice confirming my suspicions and making it all the more imperative that these two are removed from talking to him at all costs. I don't know what to say. Tell me, what can I help you with? Oh, absolutely not. I wouldn't advise disclosing anything to them, I interjected, doing my best to shatter the connection Ypilin was trying to foster. They are quite like your supervisor, or at least I would assume they are. A pair who would be all too eager to take the credit of your good work and leave any of your bad work to fall solely on your head. I have to be careful. I can't just jump to flattery myself after how hostile I was when I talked to him. Even he would notice that drastic a change. Such accusations. Ypilin gasped, recoiling in an obviously facetious manner. You do realize you're on camera right now, Vemric. I could have you held liable for slander. Of course I wouldn't dare stoop so low, but the option is always there. I had to stop myself from baring my teeth, knowing how many times I had witnessed him do that exact thing. How many times I had aided in it. It made me sick to my stomach, and I wouldn't stand for it here. It's also considered attempted tampering of evidence to interfere with a legal discussion with the intent of coercing false testimony, so I would suggest that you leave. That was enough to dent Ypilin's facade, eliciting the slightest of lip raises on the corners of his mouth. False testimony. I've done no such thing, Vemric, and you should know better than to insinuate such things. All I've done is ensure that justice is done without any foul PL. You... A roaring voice sounded through the cafeteria, causing the remaining people still eating their plundered meals to scatter back to their various departments. Entering through the door was none other than Gumshoe, looking about as furious as I felt right now. Just what in the hell are you two doing back here? Gonna try and have this little guy make a fool of himself on the stand too. Mr. Campbell, this is not a matter that involves you, Clivers calmly responded, staring down the angry human without as much as a flinch. This is a legal matter, and you are not required to be involved with any further proceedings other than those you were assigned for. I don't give a rat's ass what I'm assigned for. Gumshoe shouted, prodding a finger into Clivers' chest. All that baloney you's got me saying about time of death and blood acidity made me look like a goddamn idiot. You's moved to have my salary cut just cause you didn't like what I had to show. That ain't legal shit, that's personal. And I don't take kindly to people who make personal attacks. He swung his arm towards the door and stared the two of them down. Leave. Now. Before I's gotta make you leave. The pillion ever the charmer made an attempt to say something, but the full brunt of Gumshoe's stare destroyed that thought before it even left his mouth. In its place he huffed and narrowed his eyes at Gumshoe. Don't get uppity with me, human. This may involve the death of one of your own, but don't mistake that for us trying to get off a murderer. We're the ones trying to convict her, all you're doing is making sure she walks free to do it again. I for one wouldn't want to become known as someone who helped such a killer go free. That was more than enough for Gumshoe, his nostrils flaring out in what I assumed to be anger as he let out a low growl. Alright, that's it. You two are getting the fucking boot. See near. With that, he shot one of his meaty hands out and grabbed Clivers by the scruff, aiming to do the same with the pillion just as he had with Searle not long ago. It was a sound tactics, as there was a latent instinct for us to become limp and relaxed with pressure upon the scruff. Not with Clivers, it would seem. Before his paws even left the ground, I could already see his pupil shrinking into horizontal slits. I was just barely able to pull Searle out of the way before the usually reserved and imposing Clivers started thrashing and bleating like a newborn pup. His prosthetic leg kicked over the table, causing Stexit to run to the opposite corner and watch in terror from behind the machines. Clivers was completely inconsolable, not even making coherent words as he desperately kicked and scratched behind him, doing little against the stone wall that was Gumshoe. Other than completely startling him, of course. Jesus, the fuck are you doing? I'm just tacking you outside. Gumshoe yelled, his own vocalizations barely being heard over Clivers' frantic bleats. But that wasn't the most striking part of this display. There was one thing that I knew was above you, pillion groveling. He'd leave with nothing but a string of words to spew at you before he'd ever lower himself to begging for anything. And yet that's exactly what I saw in front of me, to my utter bewilderment. Please, let him go. You're scaring him, let him go. We'll leave, I promise. Just put him down. Let him go. Please. No flowery language. No thinly veiled threats. Not even a snide remark. This isn't possible. Upon receiving confirmation that they'd leave the premises, or perhaps just wanting to get away from the bustle of furred claws and metal, Gumshoe gladly dropped to Clivers. As soon as their feet touched the ground, the veteran fell upon his rear and crawled away until he hit the solid wall. His left paw grasped for something at his waist that wasn't there, and unlike most Vendel whose eyes would revert to their natural positions while under Jorestes were locked forward on Gumshoe. The pillion ran to his side, grasping one of Clivers' paws in his own, whispering to the traumatized Vendel and getting in their line of sight. I wasn't sure what to think. What could I think? Throughout this entire case, the impossible seemed to become mundane. This should be just another thing to add to the list. But something stuck with me. Even once Clivers had calmed enough to exit, the tears still flowing from his eyes. Even once we had agreed for Stuxic to be a witness for us upon Gumshoe sharing his testimony. Even once we were completely out of the XDC altogether, the horrible squirming thought still thrashed in my mind, as badly as Clivers had in Gumshoe's grasp. Why didn't Pillion ever treat me like that? Legal Legends 21. Memory Transcripts, Searle Lawyer Extraordinaire Apprentice. Date Standardized Human Time November 18th, 2136. And you're certain this will work? I asked, reviewing the plan we had set out just an hour ago. This all hinges on. I'm well aware of what it hinges on, Searle Venric remarked, turning the wheel of the hover transit to steer us into the correct landing zone, but it's all we have for now. If necessary, we might be able to present our copy of the video for a statement in an actual trial, but hopefully it won't come to that. That was a big hope, one that would require a bunch of space spewing and bluffing to make it possible. When I went into law school, I had expected that my career wouldn't take me to such extremes, but if the past few paws were any indication, tilling by the edge of your claws was much more commonplace than any on the outside would believe. The hover transit gave a slight jerk as it fully settled to the ground, Venric powering it off shortly afterwards. If it's any comfort, Pillion and Clivers are unlikely to be in a better position either. Yeah, I agreed weakly, still unsure of what to think. I knew that they weren't scrupulous, that they'd do whatever it took to win this case, but seeing how Clivers reacted to being grabbed, it reminded me that they were people too, not just some obstacle to overcome or subvert. Hopefully they'll be in proper shape to do their jobs. Fenric didn't respond. He hadn't been as active as he usually was since we left the hospital. I wanted to believe that he felt the same trepidation I did, but his stony gaze suggested otherwise. Without so much as acknowledging my comment, he stood from his seat and strode over to the hover transit door. Nothing to it, then let go. The walk inside towards the courtroom was thankfully uneventful, though I was momentarily surprised when we entered to see that the place was more packed than it had been the poor before. That passed when I remembered how dramatic things had gotten with Fenric's case. Without the need for an order of silence, everyone here had been free to gossip about the dramatic possibility of a murderer being found completely innocent. Had I not been part of the defense, I might have found myself joining in with the rumors. Ypilin and Iklus came in a minute after us. Compared to the complete breakdown I had seen them go through earlier, Iklus held himself firm as he walked to the stand. Ypilin seemed about as arrogant as ever, though he did glower at us a little longer than he had previously. It was clear that they hadn't forgotten what happened, and neither had we. But regardless of what came before, now was the time for action, action that would hopefully turn out in our favor. Once everyone was seated, the presiding officials made their entrances from an alternative entrance. High Magister Yelinyu and Judge Kaita both took their seats with the stomps from the silencing block sounding not long after. Silence. Court is hereby back in session. Whoever wishes to speak first, please present your renewed opening statements. For once, Ypilin didn't jump at the opportunity, eyeing us up to gauge how prepared we really were. Even more surprisingly, Fenric didn't budge at all, the veil of silence hovering over the courtroom. Once it became clear that neither wanted to speak first, Ypilin was the first to crack, clearing his throat and stepping out from behind the prosecutor's stand. High Magister Yelinyu, Your Honor, members of the jury. The only reason you're still needed here today is due to an unfortunate oversight combined with a particularly observant defense. There is still no doubt that the accused is guilty of the crime she committed, and with the refined evidence we have to present today, that lack of doubt shall soon belong to you as well. With a flick of his tail, Fenric rose to give his response. The defense looks forward to what this evidence shall be. Despite the accusation's insistence, we have pursued our lead, and what we have observed is nothing short of what we consider to be absolute proof of Enilas's innocence. The room instantly erupted in bleats of surprise, but my focus remained on our opposition. We needed them and steady second-guessing themselves and their current plan. Ypilin's ears fell back a bit at the news, turning his head so, and I stared at Fenric. He was nervous, something obvious upon close inspection, but he was putting up a good front. Really? The judge questioned, sitting up straighter in his chair. Then don't keep us waiting, show us this evidence. Well, that was an impressive drop in professionalism from the judge. Indeed, it seems both he and Magister Yelinyu were taken aback at the claim. Just as intended. Now was a time for the second step in Venric's plan. I am afraid it will have to, Your Honor. Fenric bowed his head, ears flicking in apology. If you look at the court evidence document, you will see a video file added at the end with a note attached. That note is signifying that it needs to be officially verified as having no signs of tampering and editing. The reason for that is that the video entered is a copy. The original hardware it had been stored upon has unfortunately gone missing. In order to remain within the boundaries of acceptable evidence, the footage would need to undergo a verification process which would extend beyond the timetable of this pre-trial. As such, I wish for you to allow this case to be pushed forward into full trial status so that my client may be properly defended and proved innocent, as I know she is. Magister Yelinyu's scales shifted to a light green at his words, the slight hue change clearly signaling her consideration. Her eyes flicked in separate directions as she thought, but after a second she leaned over and whispered in Justice Kaita's ear. He listened to her insight, carefully speaking as soon as she was finished. It would appear that such measures are necessary, he stated, so this court shall. Objection. Ypilin stood holding his pad in the air. It showed the unplayed file on its screen having been scrubbed to a particular spot. While Fenric may claim that this absolves his client, what the accusation discovered makes it entirely irrelevant. Irrelevant. Justice Kaita beeped, whatever do you mean? While the video itself may need to be verified, it still has the timestamp for when it was taken. Ypilin explained the defense is making the claim that the time will give Enilas an alibi, but their timeline theory is null and void. Iklus stood and swiped on his own pad, bringing a file onto the main court display. The defense is under the assumption that the methanol bag was introduced shortly before the victim expired. However, this assumption is flawed. He then swiped to another document which appeared to be an excerpt filled with technical details regarding the standard intravenous delivery system that the XGC used. As stated here in the Xenomedial Grand Complex Branch Doctrine, the speed of medicinal drip can be set as low as 5 mL per hour. This means that even if Enilas was absent for the immediate area surrounding the time of death, it's not infeasible to suggest that she altered the infusion rate during her care of the patient that poor. I winced but tried to hold myself and control my breathing. This is expected, we knew they would do something. Still, by forcing the prosecution to reveal their hand, we were setting ourselves up to be on the defensive. I pulled up my pad and looked at the report they had entered labeled as updated timeline and autopsy. If we may direct your attention to the updated report, it clearly continued the methanol bag that was found attached to Mr. Meekins' bedside stand was reported missing the pool before the murder. A full 18 hours before, to be exact. What's more, there is a gap of 10 hours between the murder and when a third-party practitioner last provided hygienic care to the victim, according to the floor's report log. A gap that any lassie could have easily utilized to install the methanol bag and change the drip speed to a low rate. Hold it. They repeated by that same logic, that would be 10 hours for anyone to have discovered the bag hanging in its place. Any lassie was not the sole practitioner responsible for Mr. Meekins' care. Papillion stood his tail swaying in worrying confidence. While my colleague might have a point in any other situation, he has rather blinded himself to a rather key fact that Meekins was a predator. And despite what he or even our governor may claim, it is quite reasonable for the majority of the staff to avoid humans whenever they have the opportunity. Therefore, unless specifically assigned or a predator themselves, the likelihood of any staff approaching the victim unprompted was extremely low. My ears remained flat on my head as I mentally cringed. With all that was happening, I had hoped we wouldn't have to deal with "oh no, dangerous humans are going to eat us all" spaceship arguments. I had naively thought we would have been beyond such things at this point, especially since one of those horrible monsters was a victim in this case. Are you suggesting that the staff had reason to avoid a comatose predator? I interjected, drawing a glance from Fenrig as I did. Whether he wanted me to speak or not, I needed to put any notion of Meekins being a threat to rest. He needed to have his bedpan changed. There was no chance that he was in any way threatening to the hospice staff, unless you were to insinuate that they were so flighty that they couldn't handle the notion of being in the same room as a predator, despite the fact that many of them work with predators, active and conscious predators, might I add, every pore. Unlike Meekins, the staff are obligated to tolerate the presence of predators in their workspace. Pill encountered, there is a conscious choice involved in which patients to provide hospice to. It just so happens that most will choose to service the prey first. The moral implications of these actions are a fascinating debate, but ultimately irrelevant to the trial at Paul. What matters is that there was nobody in Meekins' room between his last hospice visit and the time of death. Nobody except any lassie, that is. With a flick, the display screen changed. It was a duty roster, and any lassie's name was listed as the hospice assigned during the 12-hour stretch prior to the time of death. So Pillin concluded, as the only person in the area with both access to the murder implements and the patient, as well as the only person with the opportunity to do so. Then, as we have stated since the beginning, any lassie is the only one capable of doing the act. They did it. They actually said the words. I had expected things to go well, but for them to out and say it so soon with so little coaxing, it was almost like I was dreaming. I had at least been prepared to think up at least two more backward scathing remarks, but there was no need. With that, we could finally move on to stage 3 and cinch this case for good. I glanced over to Venrik to see if he caught it too, and his furiously wagging tail told me all I needed to know. Now for him to hold up his end. Thank you for your elaboration, accusation, Venrik stated, doing his best to still his tail before Epilion and Eclivers noticed. Perhaps I should work on doing the same. For the court record, you stand by your arguments that Enhilasi was the only one capable of performing the act on Mr. Meekins. Pillin's eyes narrowed, but he eventually flicked his ears, sealing the deal in entirety. They had fallen for it utterly and completely, and who wouldn't? They are arguing their case and using extenuating circumstances to extend the region of plausibility in a desperate attempt to avoid this matter being sent to actual trial and thus having to properly argue against the footage without the use of hypotheticals. It was a predator trap of the highest magnitude, and it had gone completely unnoticed until it was too late. What that says about us, I'll leave up to later interpretation. We appreciate your confirmation, Fenrig responded, leaning forward on the cabinet top. Please continue with your statement. Taken aback by Venrik's sudden willingness to allow them time to lay out their case, Epilion and Eclivus glanced at each other, Epilion raising his eyebrow and Eclivus flicking his scarred ear. It was hard to tell from this far away, but I was almost certain they were nonverbally debating whether to continue speaking or not. Eventually, though, they came to a conclusion, with Eclivus taking the lead. The accusation has nothing more to say, Your Honor. Judge Keiter flicked his ears before turning his attention to us. Acknowledged. Defense, do you have any further statements to make? Yes, we do. I spoke up before Venrik could so much as open his mouth. For once, I felt confident in our abilities to blow this case wide open, and I wasn't about to let that hot shot take all the credit. The defense would like to motion to call a witness to the stand. The audience started murmuring amongst one another at my admission, followed shortly by a bang from the judge's silencing block. A witness? Keiter asked, confused. What witness? We haven't had anyone check in for before he could finish his statement. The court clerk's ears perked up and he waved the judge down. They hurried up to him and whispered something in his ear, something that I had a strong feeling of exactly what it was. The judge's ears raised in surprise, but he quickly composed himself. It would appear that your witness has just arrived at the front desk. Would you like to continue your motion to have him appear on the stand? Yes, Fenwick replied, not one to be beaten to the bushel twice in a row. The defense would like to call inventory manager Stexic to testify. The judge paused, his gaze quickly alternating between Fenwick and the court clerk. Stexic, yes, are you absolutely sure that you want this particular witness to come to the stand?
Yes, Your Honor, we are quite certain.
Keiter brushed a paw through his mane for a second before flicking his ears forward in approval. The clerk quickly trotted towards the court door and slid it open, allowing our witness to crawl in on all fours. I had never really thought about it before, but the way Sivkits walked looked rather awkward, as if they were unsteady on all fours. And that awkwardness felt accentuated now that it was under the gaze of a packed courtroom audience. I heard a small whistle of laughter carry as he walked forward, murmurs flowing through the crowd. A Sivkit. What is? With those stupid. Must have gotten lost in this place. Stexic continued forward to the witness stand, resting his paws on the railing as he pulled himself onto his hind legs. The clerk stood aside, ears flicking uncertainty. Do you swear to tell the truth, all of the truth as well as you are capable of telling? I do swear, Stexic stated, seemingly unfazed by the not-so-well-hidden cheers from the crowd. I had hoped there would be a bit more professionalism on display here of all places, but I supposed stereotypes were known as such for a reason. Regardless, this would only play to our advantage, as Eclivus and Epilion were looking much less worried. It was ironic they appeared as such despite their attempts at glazing the certificate earlier. The crowd expected nothing, the accusation expected nothing, even the presiding figures expected nothing. But they're all about to get everything they could possibly ask for. Legal Legends 22. Memory Transcript. Fenwick Lawyer Extraordinaire. Date Standardized Human Time November 18th 2136. Out of all the witnesses I could have chosen to deal with, the Sivkit would have normally been last of the list. It was not only well known but scientifically proven that they were mentally deficient, not just as individuals but as a whole species. While the reasons for such were unknown to me, it wasn't something that came up often enough to require my research. I only knew that whatever it was, it made for Sivkits to be one of the worst possible options for a lawyer to rely upon. Thankfully, it would seem that whatever defective genes caused the Sivkits' idiocy were not a universal factor for them. I had been naive enough to assume that earlier this port, but I was proven dead wrong at every turn. I had a good feeling that this Sivkit could replicate his impressive feat of remembrance at the hospital, and after checking, I knew for a fact that his memory was nigh perfect. A fact that Epilion is about to discover. Your Honor. Epilion cried, pointing towards the witness incredulously. The accusation objects to this witness. This is clearly a ploy to make a mockery of this court by bringing in an irrelevant witness to drag out all of our time. Their relevance is in terms to the claim that Enilasi was the only one capable of the act I counted, directing my attention to Justice Keitert as well as having knowledge related to the methanol bag. I assure you, Your Honor, he is very relevant to the case at port if you'll allow his testimony. Objection overruled. Be that as it may, Keitert ventured, pulling on his Lucius luxurious mane, how can you assure their competence towards testifying? Are you handsome man? You still have some things to learn. While I understand your apprehension, Staxit is truly an exemplar for his race. Even from my short time of knowing him, his memory is next to none. If you wish to gauge competence, I am certain he will pass whatever test you present before him. Why, yes, Stexic stammered, sitting up a little straighter now that he was sure he had my support. I'm not stupid. I know how things are meant to work. I know. Keiter paused before flicking his ears toward the accusation. Would the herd like to test their capabilities? We would, Eclivus stated while pulling up his pad. Mr. Stexic, according to your entered records, you have been employed at the XGC for 6 years as inventory management.
That is correct.
Yes, it is. In that case, you should have experience in the field of finding and gathering medical material. Tell me, Tifidzorulin were to call for 54 cc's of polyexprin to be mixed with 96 cc's of obindrol as part of a treatment for partial tissue necrosis and blood toxicity, what would be the materials needed to apply them intravenously to complete the whole treatment? Stexic tilted his head in clear confusion. I can't answer that. You can't answer the question. Eclivus repeated, tilting his head before looking at the judge. Your Honor, I don't believe he can answer the question. Stexic, please answer the question, Keiter ordered. We can't have this court's time wasted. This was it, wasn't it? My punishment for taking a risk on a Sivkit being brought to court. I should have. Your Honor, nobody could answer that question. It's impossible. Stexic pleaded. Epilion huffed, giving Stexic an exasperated glance. Look, you don't have to pretend. Rora Sivkit, you can admit you don't know the.
No, Polyaxpirin and albendrol are unmixable. They would react in the vials to produce a corrosive compound strong enough to induce toxic shock in almost every species other than phenylethylamine and tacin. If you gave adrenaline that compound, they'd die of internal bleeding before the sepsis could even set in. You are to never let them combine outside of strictly necessary situations, the exceptions listed in accordance with section 4.14 paragraphs 5 through 18. Eccles opened his mouth as if to say something but stopped. His ears twitched in uncertainty to minor gesture that told me all I needed to know. He was completely thrown off his game. Sackett's ears flicked confidently. The proper treatment for necrosis and blood toxicity would involve both medications, with the polyaxaprin introduced in the first month of treatment using a 15:1 saline to medication ratio. After that month, they would have to detox with the pregolifen to manage inflammation of the blood vessels, 16 doses over 1.41414 weeks. Then they received the albendrol through the same application. The necrotic flesh would have been isolated by the swelling, and the opportunistic bacteria would have absorbed the polyaxaprin, retaining it through the cleanse. When the albendrol is introduced, the toxic compounds created in a reaction would destroy the bacteria and the necrotic tissue they inhabit until all traces of them are destroyed in the body. Once the immune system has done its work, over the course of about 6 pours, they receive a dosage of cleanser cash 2 and a 3.5-day stint on a dialyzer to complete the full treatment. The court was in complete silence as Staxit tapped his paws on the railing, his ears flicking in thought. In total, I would say it would take me under 5 minutes to have everything prepared on its trolley for the first treatment, and afterwards I would be able to gather the meds as part of standard tray prep, leaving only the dialyzer to be gathered for the final treatment. That's how you do it, yes, that's how. I blinked, shaking my head and letting my tail wag freely. Whatever thoughts I had about Staxit being an exception, I was now certain had been underestimating by just how much. Of course, I would leave actual administering of treatment to the licensed practitioners. They would not fall under the case of exceptions in accordance with Chapter 4, Subsection 22.7. I hope that is more than enough proof, Your Honor. Oh, he coughed it, yes. Yes, it is. You may proceed with the testimony. A bowed in thanks, feeling quite smug as the accusation practically fell back into their seats in utter befuddlement. I knew this would only last for so long, which meant I would need to get straight into everything. Mr. Staxitz, I began, the accusation has made the claim that my client is the only Koshin who was capable of committing the crime of murder. Do you agree with this statement? The only one. Staxitz snorted, his ears flicking in thought. No, she's not. She wasn't the only one, not by any margin. Is that so? I asked, preempting the obvious argument Yupilian and Eclivus would raise. According to the accusation, every Koshin that was working for the XGC branch was investigated. Enilasi was the only Koshin assigned to that floor within the time frame raised by the accusation. What was it, 10 hours? Oh yes, that's right, the Koshins who worked for the XGC couldn't have done it, Non-Staxi confirmed repeatedly. I heard they were all investigated, even had people talk to my boss about whom of them had access. Only Enilasi was left of those. He swallowed, steeling himself for what he was about to say. But they missed someone. Their list was incomplete. There is a Koshin working at the XGC who is not on the employee list. The court erupted in bleats and shouts, confusion abounding at his words. Objection. Yupilian yelled. This what the Civkit is suggesting is impossible. There weren't any Koshin visitors on record, nor Koshin patients logged on that floor. Any workers would have been included upon the staff list as per their contract. There's no way for a Koshin to have been working without either being removed from the premises or being on the staff list. Staxit pulled himself on his hind legs so he stood higher. Yes, there is. They weren't part of the staff there, no. They were an external consultant. Consultants and staff, so they aren't on the list. Another round of vitriolic discussion rose up around us, which was silenced quickly by 3 strong stumps on behalf of Judge Keiter. Order. Order in the court. Mr. Staxic, what are you saying? I stood with a flourish of my tail. What he's saying, Your Honor, is that Enilasi was not the only suspect that could have committed the crime. Yes, there's a consulting doctor who's a Koshin there, Staxic agreed, and they weren't looked at in the slightest, no. Keiter and High Magister Yelenu's expressions softened into confusion. Are you really saying that the investigation completely overlooked this person? Keiter coughed. They find that hard to believe. Cases like this are handled with the utmost care. They stood firm. And Your Honor. Not only that, but I will also ascertain that they are someone who also had both the ability and opportunity to commit the crime. Staxit, would you please explain about the methanol bag? Objection. Yupilian yelled, desperately trying to recompile the court in his favor. The defense has set up no groundwork to connect this mysterious other Koshin to the methanol whatsoever. They have no grounds to make such an absurd claim. Do I need to remind you that Staxit is employed in inventory management? A countered and on the report of the methanol bag who was the one who reported it missing and gave you such an accurate time on when it first disappeared. Go ahead view the court records and tell me. Pillin's ears fell as he brought his pad up to an eye. I knew he was scrutinizing it for anything that could stick a wrench in my plans, but I likewise knew he'd find nothing. After a second he fell back into his seat. Objection withdrawn. I couldn't help my tail wagging at how smug I felt right now. Those two had been just so eager to try out their tricks. They'd been so quick to waltz in with all the updated reports, their activities just barely on the side of legality, but now they were fully on the back foot. I needed to press forward. Gesturing for Staxer to continue, I sat back to listen to his testimony. That port I had been gathering the first core prep materials and sent them off with the Zorulin stuffer. Then the Kulshan came in and asked for a small bag of Luren's ilk. He had the proper forms all filled out, so I went into the back and returned with the proper meds. After he had left, NLRC arrived at my desk and asked for an extra tray of Roman 4 needles Terz had gotten contaminated by a new patient. I pulled them off the shelf next to us and sent her on her way. After that I started compiling the daily inventory, which was when I first noticed that the methanol bag had been missing. This happened 18 hours before the incident and I made sure to note it in my inventory report. Staxit swallowed, flicking one of his ears with a paw. That was the report those humans took when they came to collect information. What's more, I continued using every opportunity I had to press the advantage the accusation has made, the claim that the bag could have been set up upwards of 10 hours prior to time of death and diffused at a rate that it would have only reached fatal levels at the timestamp specified in the updated autopsy report. Would you agree that such a thing would lie within the realm of possibility? Note, it isn't, Staxit stated matter-of-factly. The intravenous medication diffusion machines currently at the XGC branch have multiple predetermined rate settings. I have two machines currently in storage waiting for repairs due to the buttons controlling those settings failing, and neither of those have left since I tagged them for maintenance. The diffusion rate required for the accusation's theory would be well below the most diffuse option. The minimum rate would give at most a quarter claw before the fatal level was achieved, 1.22998382998 hours exactly. Pillin's mouth hung agape as his entire argument fell apart in front of his eyes. Ihlivas, for his part, also seemed dumbfounded at the fact that a circuit was disproving their theory to the point that his breathing seemed to have increased and pupil shrank. It was almost like he was on the verge of a personal stampede. Eyes on the other paw was not, my tail felt like a blur behind me. To think the circuit had both ruined and saved our defense. Perhaps then Elassi will go free this paw after they request a cross-examination of a witness. My tail stilled immediately. I focused my attention on the source of the request, which just so happened to be Pillin himself. While not entirely recovered from his bout of shock, he seemed confident enough to suggest that he had something up his coat. Or on, this entire testimony hinges on the fact that the witness, the circuit, mind you, has complete comprehensive and exact knowledge of the workings of an entire medical branch of the Xenomedical Grand Complex. To avoid any potentiality of the witness being coached by the defense to say what they require him to say for their ridiculous claims to be true, then certainly they would not object to us asking him to recite a random section from the conduct code he's apparently memorized in its entirety. Despite all that I had just heard, all that I knew to be true, a nagging voice still tugged at my consciousness from the back of my head. Ikelin was right, Staxit was still a circuit. There was always the possibility that it could all come crumbling down, that whatever miracle was allowing his photographic memory could falter in some way. If that happened, if he was wrong on even a single word, it would mean the complete collapse of our defense. It would call into question everything we had so meticulously set up over the course of this session, forcing us into trial. Am I really willing to hinge the success of this entire case on him? I was willing to defend Talin before. His chances of going free were far less than Staxit's chances of freeing NLRC now. And even if Staxit is an outlier of his species, I have met many outliers of the Venlil as well. I glanced over at Cell. Outliers can do a lot more than people expect. Without any further hesitation, I took a deep breath. And I spoke. The defense fully accepts the accusation's request for their cross-examination. The Pillin's smug look almost gave me second thoughts, but I knew better than to trust that voice in the back of my head any longer, that voice that had driven me to do so many horrible things all those rotations ago. No, I wasn't about to let it gain another victory over me, let him gain another victory over me. No matter how smug he might seem now, I knew that I was right, and I wasn't about to let that faith be wavered again. And so I watched silently as Pillin approached the witness stand, his tail smoothly waving behind him. So, Mr. Staxit, do you agree with the statement that you've memorized the entire Xenomedial Grand Complex branch doctrine? Pillin asked, confidence radiating from his tone. Staxit, for his part, remained calm and flicked his ears affirmatively. And you therefore ascertain that you are capable of reciting any portion of it from memory with perfect accuracy. Staxet seemed to hesitate slightly this time, but he likewise maintained his affirmative nonverbal gesture. Let it be known to the court that witness Staxet maintains his confidence in his ability to recall with perfect accuracy. Now, with that out of the way, please recite pages 212-234. I was immediately taken aback by the sheer volume of content that Epilion was requesting of Staxet. No Sifkit, no Vanil, no species could ever hope to perfectly memorize the sheer quantity of information that he was asking, and Staxet's reaction proved it. I almost didn't realize that Searle was frantically elbowing me until she waved a paw in front of my face. I glanced over at her in disbelief, only for her to shove her pad in my face. It was navigated to the first page that Epilion had ordered Staxet to recite, and it's the Braking Appendix **. Of course he would pull some underpaid dirty spaking trick like this. Why hadn't I seen this coming? Had I really forgotten the kind of things he used to pull? Did I really think he would pull his punches? For me, of all people. I had been an absolute fool, and genius or not, there wasn't a chance in the cycle that anyone could do that. It's over all because I expected him to be the slightest bit fair. Guess I still haven't really accepted reality, huh? You win, you beautiful monster. Arbusivin administering procedure, page 144. Arbusivin dosage recommendations, page 144. Arbusivin side effects and retroactivators, page 145. Ardexillo administering procedure, page 119. Is he actually? Against all sense of logic, sense or reason, Staxic started listing the entries in the appendix in alphabetical order, complete with the page numbers accompanying each entry. As he spoke, I glued my eyes to Searle's pad, checking each and every entry that he listed, looking for as much as a misspeak in his words. Judge Kaita, High Magister Yelin Yu of the audience, and Epilion himself watched with awe as he methodically moved through the appendix, his paws waving in front of him as he spoke the words with growing confidence. And they were all correct. It was like he was scrolling through an invisible pad in his paws, reading out each entry one by one. I watched as the confidence and arrogance that Epilion once had drained from his being in real time, with even a Clivers being unable to contain his disbelief at the situation that was unfolding before us. When Staxet started listing the entries, starting with them, though, the dam that was Epilion's patience finally burst. And I have front row seating. Enough, he shouted, any air of professionalism gone from his voice. Before anyone could react, he marched up to the witness stand and harshly poked a claw into Staxet's chest, leaving him unable to move from shock. What the brog kind of Sifkit are you? Who do you think you are? The court immediately became a blur of commotion after that. Guards rushed to separate the irate accusatory lawyer from my witness. The audience positively flooded the air with raucous noise, then my tail slammed against the wall of our cabinet, creating a rhythmic knocking noise that almost drowned out Judge Kaita's silencing block. Order, order. Epilion, assaulting the witness is most certainly not allowed. That will constitute a severe penalty on your record. Epilion callously shook off the guards once they had escorted him back to the accusations' cabinet, glaring at the judge. Upon closer inspection, I could even see hints of moisture forming in the corner of his eyes. Either those guards had roughed him up more than expected, or the fact that he wasn't winning this case was finally starting to reach through his thick skull. The fact that he had lost to me serves you right, you backstabbing bastard. I sincerely apologize for my associate's behavior, and I will ensure it will not happen again, Eclivus quickly replied to Judge Kaita, giving a quick glance our way before continuing. However, I would like to make a point. While Staxic's comprehension has been thoroughly proven, this alternative suspect has yet to be identified and brought before the court. Furthermore, there is still a chance that Enelasi could have tampered with the system found in Mr. Meekin's room in some way that we did not have the foresight to check for initially. In light of this new information, I would like to motion to dismiss this court for another paw to ensure that proper justice is served for the late victim of this crime. While that wasn't an ideal outcome, it would at least give us time to confirm our suspicions regarding Caldona. All signs pointed to him, but the last thing I wanted to do was drag yet another innocent person through the mud. As unlikely and possibility as that was now. The defense backs this motion, I said, expressing my exceedingly rare support for anything that came out of those two's mouths. Seeing that the decision was unanimous, Judge Kaita huffed and stomped his block a single time. Motion passed. Court will resume session in exactly one paw. You are now free to leave. The audience clamored as they all raised from their seats, the discussions constant and dissonant as people started filing out of the courtroom. I was immediately caught off guard by a firm pressure around my entire body, which I quickly realized was Searle hugging me, her tail a blur by all means. Vemric, we did it. The plan worked. Well, of course it worked, I was the one who masterminded it. I replied, my own tail matching Searle's in ferocity and speed. I still can't believe that Epilion was slimy enough to attempt to catch Staxic with the appendix of all things. That disbelief extends further to the fact that he was able to defeat it completely legitimately. I know, He thought we were arcs of bait for certain, Searle agreed. But he pulled through. And now we have an entirely new port to use to our advantage. So tell me where to now. By the tone of her voice I could tell that she and I had the same idea in mind. It was time to properly confront the architect of all this pandemonium. For whatever reason he did this, it was about to land him in a very dark cell for a very long time. And serves him right for forcing me to interact with the Pillin again. Where else? We have a squid to interrogate. League of Legends 23. Memory transcript self determined investigative Lorven. Date standardized human time November 18th 2136. The Nyward winds blew against my wall as I made the trek back out to the hover transit from our hotel, a warm cup of freshly brewed tea warming my paws. The victory high from last pour had allowed this most recent sleek claw to be one of the most restful I had ever experienced, making the gentle liquid pick me up a necessity. Going by the clock it was only about 3/4 of a full claw, but by the stars I felt amazing. As if I could take on a dozen more cases with time to spare. This is probably how Venric feels after each unlikely success. Given what I saw before me, that seemed to be the case. Venric was already leaning against the side of our ride sipping his own beverage. I hadn't the full guessed how he'd woken up before me, seeing as how my rest claw was already unusually short. However, that wasn't of much concern, seeing as we were both awake and hopefully ready to renew our investigation. Good port, I offered Venric as I swallowed my mouthful of tea, the entrance door to the hover transit opening at Venric's command. So back to the hospital, right? Yep, Venric flipped his ears forward as he climbed in before me. Got to find out if Caldana is working to date and where he lives if he isn't. Hope this caffeine kicked in fast, cause we're gonna need it. My tail wagged as the vehicle came to life beneath me. I bucked myself in right as the hover transit began to move, taking a deep breath once I was secure. This was it. This was the difference between any lossy having to go through a tedious trial to get a bot guilty and getting found fully innocent right away. We needed to bring forth all our investigative capabilities for this task and then some. We couldn't afford for Pillin and Clivis to think up some asinine yet technically correct reason why the footage couldn't be admissible in court. Ready or not, Caldana, we're coming for you. No matter how hard you try to hide. Transcription pause. CME time for SDH1 **. Forwarding. Done. Resume transcription. Y/N. Playing. I may have overprepared myself. The hover transit parked itself right outside the designated location. As I stepped out onto the quiet street, I shook my head in disbelief. So that's it? I asked. We just found them. Well, yeah, Venric shrugged nonchalantly. Advisable or not, hospitals tend to keep a list of their staff's addresses. He whistled quietly to himself. Ah, so long I've been used to dealing with uncooperative situations I had almost forgotten that there are people who will actually let you see stuff by legally requesting to. I had to admit, I had nearly forgotten too. That overlooked convenience had resulted in us currently standing directly outside of Caldana's home address. It was a fairly standard prefab home, long single-story solar panel roof and brown wood panels with painted white trim. It even had a SATCOM dish on the roof tilted slightly towards the road. But a glance, it's an entirely unassuming Venlil home. But only at a glance. What set it apart from all the rest were the multitude of flowers everywhere you looked, hanging around the door set atop the windowsills, growing in planters on the front wall. Blue, purple, green in shapes all their own, and not a single one native to this planet, but they were native to a planet. Without fail, each and every of them were often plants kinds you'd imagine based on every piece of media ever shown of the Federation's heart. To not only care for them in such a different environment, but do so well they flourished throughout their little yard was a testament to either skill or wealth. I am having so many intrusive thoughts right now, Venric commented under his breath as we walked towards the door. HMPH should have gotten a larger salad at the cafeteria. I raised my tail cautiously, already knowing what he intended by saying that. I can't advise you to eat the flowers, sir. Heed your no fun, he laughed briefly. I had to whistle along with him as well. The mood was absolutely fantastic right now. It felt like we could do anything. Carrying that confidence, I strode right up to the door and gave the notifying bell a ring. It was a deep drone, as if from a temple bell, two quick chimes followed by a long dong. Fancy, Venric muttered as he gave his vest a quick brush down to free it of any errant dust that might have settled. I followed suit with my collar, my efforts rewarded by a few small puffs. Look professional, stay firm. After all, we're talking to a murderer. Oh stars, we're about to talk to a murderer. I lifted the bases of my ears as much as I could manage, pointing them towards the door and listening as hard as I could. We were actually standing outside the house of someone who killed a person. They killed without remorse or guilt and then tried to pin it upon an innocent. And we were just going to serve them a demand to appear in court. How could I have not thought this through? I didn't. The door creaked open and an old Kolshin stepped into the frame. His purple skin held a few wrinkles where it sagged under his eyes, then the fins on the side of his head were a paler purple than had been on Enelasi. A lab coat hung itself off his shoulders, all white and pristine, and right upon his head was a blue poshler-rimmed hat. He stared at us with his wavy pupils for a second before he clasped his tentacles together and spoke. "Oh, why hello. I wasn't expecting company today. Please may I ask who you two are?" "Yes," Fenric answered with a wag of his tail. How he had even managed that was completely beyond me. "We are lawyers currently defending a client, and we believe that the occupant of this building will have testimony that is of our interest. Would you happen to be Kaldner?" The Koshin squinted, looking Fenric up and down with some hesitancy. "And I do believe we have met before." "Indeed we have. Would you happen to remember where you saw me last?" Fenric replied, only serving to further stiffen my tail with how he seemed to almost taunt Kaldner. "Has he so soon forgotten this man is a murderer?" His tentacles tensed slightly around themselves at the question. But otherwise his eyes seemed to keep the gentle glimmer of a kind old man. Oh, he burbled a light laugh. "I recall now it was while we ate. Yes, I'm Kaldner. May I ask for your names? I have some small issues with such things these days." Fenric gave a bow, gesturing quickly for me to follow suit. "We are Fenric and Serld, and it's so good to meet you again, Mr. Kaldner. I hope this meeting won't be any trouble for you." "Oh, no trouble at all. Please come in. It would be quite rude of me to keep you two just standing outside," the elderly Koshin offered as he stood aside and allowed us access. "Why, thank you," Fenric wagged as we began to step inside. "We have informed the court we will be visiting your home, so we won't be long." Kaldner's eyes narrowed slightly at Fenric's words, but he didn't move to block our entry. I steeled myself, following Fenric into the predator den. What did we have to expect from this place? What would a killer's home look like? It's kind of boring, honestly. The insides were also of a prefabricated design. The kitchen and living room were open concept, with two open doors to a bedroom and what looked to be an office space off to the side. Going by the electronics and computer equipment the second room seemed to hold at a glance, I surprised to spot what looked to be one of those advanced immersive virtual reality headsets hanging within, with the added sensor gloves for their tentacles. Quite the setup for someone of his age to possess. It all looked rather expensive, I had to admit, but those were the only shows of wealth that I could identify. The living room had a standard couch with a standard tea table, which even had actual papers on it. Denial stamps marked their covers, then by their dates it looked like he had been one of those who had attempted to get a job off-world after contact with the humans. Despite everything I saw though, what was lacking was there anything that signaled they were a murderer at all? "Can I get you two anything to drink?" Kaldner offered, gesturing toward his couch for us to sit. "I do have Fennel Brand, it's about all I have lately. Trade has been so difficult lately, so nothing exotic." "Thank you, but you don't have to," Fenric commented as he took a seat. "Unless perhaps you may have some brands from Earth, if I may venture by that hat of yours." Kaldner gave the brim of his hat a tug down over his head, his tail swaying and fins rising. "In fact, I do. Though I must admit it's mostly the alcohol. They make a variety of fruity beverages. I doubt it will hold a candle to the strengths you Venel are used to. Most of their spirits only come to 5-10% all ethanol-based too." I blinked in disbelief. "That wheat. That's practically just juice." "Quite a shame," Fenric sighed, wrapping his tail around his waist so as not to take up more space than need be. "Nothing of Jorulin make thy would venture." "Oh, those have been rather impossible to get," Kaldner laughed. "Hopefully new economic lanes shall be established with them some date, but today is not that day." "Oh, you are sure you don't want anything? I'm more than happy to share." "No, thank you," Fenric said, pulling out his data pad from his belt pack and turning the screen toward the Koshin. "We only need to give you this and send you on your way." I studied the man as he read what it held and took it into his tentacles. His eyes were steady as they scanned the screen. It was a legal summons to testify, one that was very specific. We knew he worked at the XGC hospital. We had been able to get his consulting information when we had looked up his residence. That made him an important person in this case, with his inclusion legally required. While he could refuse to come in to personally testify, he would have to acknowledge his presence at the XGC as part of the form. And thus, even in the worst case of having to move on to full trial, giving more than enough doubt for Enelasi to walk free. Kaldner rubbed behind his head, smoothing down a head fin as he tapped on the screen. "Arthur summons to court to testify about that ghastly death of that human. Well, I'm more than willing to do my legal duty. I would be happy to sign. However, I'm afraid you're missing something." I tilted my head in confusion, as did Fenric. "Missing something? Oh, it's nothing major," Kaldner laughed. "It's simply that this pad is designed for those of traditionally mammalian make, and thus their signature scanner is made to search for their poor pad impacts." He held up one of his tentacles, waving it in the air for effect. "I don't believe I need to point out where I'm lacking in that department." My ears fell as I barely managed to keep myself from grimacing. He was actually correct. Data pads usually had to get specialized readers and software installed for facial or print recognitions from non-conformational species, especially if they're a minority on the planet they're produced on, which meant we would need a tentacle reader to get Kaldana's mark. Thankfully, that shouldn't be an issue. Kaldana continued walking towards his office. I have a tentacle reader adapter in my workroom. This won't take any time at all. We stood following him into his office in order to prevent any funny business. My glimpse of it earlier had been rather lacking, as unbelievable of an assessment as that was. Practically two of its walls were taken up by computer server racks, with the third by a myriad of computer screens nearly comparable to the security room camera worked in. Kaldana just strode right up to his computer and attached a cord into the pad, setting it onto the table without a fuss. So far so good, which isn't good at all. What's he getting at? This is an impressive little setup, Vemmett commented, glancing around as we waited for Kaldana to finish with the adaptation process. Very useful indeed. This place allows me to virtually participate in surgeries or observe consultations all across the planet at just a few clicks of a button. Kaldana laid his tentacle on a metallic strip to chime coming from Verrick's pad. Of course, I do have a preference for in-person meetings. Might be old-fashioned to some, but that is the way that it's been done for ages and it hasn't failed us yet. An artificial chime sounded as Kaldana picked up the pad and unhooked it, passing it over to Verrick. Bart, and it is done. All signed and ready. I do hope everything is in order. Vemmett held the pad, scrutinizing the tentacle mark as he glanced between it and Kaldana, who was fiddling with the cuffs of their coat. After a second, Vemmett waved his tail in approval. Yes, I believe it's all good now. We thank you so much for your time, Kaldana, and we look forward to your presence later this poor. I am sure you do. The elderly Kolchin laughed as he escorted us towards the front doors, opening it for us in a disconcerting show of politeness. So long, my good friends. May we all get what we desire from this. I bowed politely and walked out with Venric. Nothing happened as we exited nor upon our travel to the hover transit. Indeed, Venric plugged his pad into charge and took off as Kaldala gave a polite wave goodbye, quickly speeding out of sight. I turned to Venric in shock as we ascended far past where Kaldana could ever hope to hear us. Is that it? Is what it? Venric questioned from his controller seat. That. I yelped, unable to contain my composure any longer. I mean, he was just an old man. And their place looked just like any other home. Just computers, applications, just normal. Nothing at all like a monstrous killer, huh? Venric asked with a laugh. What were you expecting, orange stained knives adorning their walls? No, I thought there would at least be something, I admitted, leaning back in my seat with an agitated huff. There usually isn't, I'm afraid, Venric soothed as he swiveled around and let the autopilot take control with a ding. Did it ding before? People can do terrible things and still live life like anyone else. No matter what PD diagnoses say, there really aren't always clear signs to tell someone's character, regardless of how easy it would make our jobs. I flicked my tail behind me frustratedly. I had wanted to just come in and just find proof right away. Proof that Kaldana was evil scum, deserving of being locked where the light of the stars would never reach him again. But I guess wishing isn't going to do me any good right now. Venric's pad gave a chime, lifting both of our ears in attention. Venric peered over at the message and glowered. Ipilin is messaging me. He wants to talk about making a deal. A deal? I tilted my head suspiciously. Enelasi is innocent. What deal would they even be capable of making? I don't know, Venric admitted, concern mirroring his tone. But they want to meet up at the sterile park to talk about it. A bit out of the way, but are we going? I asked, uncertainly straightening my collar's metallic cuff to make myself just that much more comfortable. I always hated it when it got misaligned and I didn't need any further distractions from the case. Vemmett let out a deep sigh as he typed in coordinates into the hover transit's computational systems. I'm afraid we are. Knowing those two, if we don't meet them there, they'll try something else that we won't be able to prepare for as easily. I flicked my ears forward in approval, settling back into my seat. We were so close. Just got to get this meeting over with and we can get back to Enelasi. I'm so ready for this to be over. Sars, my collar is off filter again. What's causing that? Legal Legends 24. Memory transcript, Fenric Fennel, lawyer. Date standardized human time, November 18th, 2136. I shifted in my seat, unable to feel comfortable despite our success at sequestering Kaldana's appearance in court. It was like I was being pulled at all the wrong angles and I couldn't do anything to dispel the pullers. Why had Ipilin waited until now to make this deal? And why make a deal at all? That wasn't like him, he never backed down from anything. I huffed, leaning back into my seat and giving my spine a pop. The nav computer was saying we were coming up to the park specified, so I disabled the autopilot and directed the vehicle towards the parking area. I knew that we needed to be in a spot with an active security camera in the likely event that this deal was a ploy for something else. Thankfully, finding one didn't take long. The pair were close to the lot entrance. If they had been this brazen meeting us in a public place, then they must be confident in their decision. I twisted the wheel so the vehicle hovered over to a spot that was in the center of one's view and initiated the landing sequence. It must have been how I yanked the controls as the vehicle came down far too quickly. It slammed its landing rails into the ground hard. I grunted as I felt the shock shoot up my spine. I was barely able to breathe before white fabric bounced into the side of my vision, resting on the base of the center console. "Stars, Fenric," Sir bleated, quickly unbuckling herself and making her way over to retrieve whatever that was. "Gently. You made me drop my color." I reached down and picked up the frilly thing for her before unbuckling myself. "Brock, sorry. Hit the thing too hard," I mumbled, passing the collar back to my assistant. Sir grabbed it, jolting back a little at the spark of static electricity as she did. She shook her head as she replied it around her short shaven neck. "I'll say. I know you have a history with the pill, and is it bothering you that much?" "We had incompatible worldviews," I grunted, unwilling to continue the conversation as I pulled open the door. Everything felt heavy with the coming task on my mind. He knows just what buttons to push with me, and I have no doubt he's found something he thinks will get me to capitulate. Sir stumbled out of the hover transit, sliding the door closed behind her. "Their mistake. We're winning. There's nothing they could offer us now." Did they include where in this park they would be waiting? Yet in front of the bulbon tree by the park entrance. I shortly stated, staring off towards where I knew those two would be waiting. It was a small park, just one of those patches of greenery in cities with carefully manicured vegetation for their pleasing appearances. The trees at least was rather obvious by its inverted triangular shape, though as I approached I was annoyed to see that its base was absent of any lawyers. A part of my brain wanted to say that this was a trick by Pilly in the petty act to make us waste our time, but despite everything I knew him better than that. This was me being early, the result of having a hover transit that could simply sip over all the traffic and herds of the town. That did help my mood a bit. It was certainly a testament to how I had gone farther than he ever had. Before I could even make a comment, a white car drove into the parking space in front of the tree and came to a stop. I could already see him through the window, both of them. Quite the timely arrival, I callously greeted as the doors opened. "I am quite curious why you wanted to meet us in a park rather than somewhere more official like the courthouse." "As I just thought you might find this place much more to your liking," he Pillin returned with thinly veiled venom in his voice. "What with your utter contempt of the legal system and all. You had a deal for us, if I remember right." Sir Deadhunter Epilin Clivers exiting behind his partner. "Don't waste our time, be bitter exes on someone else's sentencing. Any lassie is still rotting in custody because of this, and I'd rather set her free as soon as possible." "Then I believe we're of the same mind," Epilin remarked. My ears shot straight up at that admission, with Sir's ear bases perking in such a way that I knew that had she the capability her body language would have mirrored mine. "I'll address that bitter ex's quote later. I am sorry I must have misheard. What did you just say?" "He said that I believe I can get you to exactly what you want." Epilion purred, clasping his paws together. Any lassie walking free, completely innocent of all wrongdoing. The evidence was undeniable, the Cliver stated, bluntly exiting their vehicle. "It will be a victory for your careers and a victory for ours as well." "Victory?" I asked, my mind racing to try and figure out what they were getting at here. "But she'll have been proven innocent. There's no way that both of us can win here. Either she walks free or she doesn't." "Oh no, that's not what it means," Icarus corrected. "I can assure you we will both be getting what we want here, impossible as that may sound." Sir tilted her ears, giving the both of them a quizzical expression. "And now that the showbiting is out of the way, I assume you'll tell us what it is that you want exactly. So far all you've made is promises. Hopefully you actually have something to show for it." "That we do," the Pillin tittered. He gave his glossy mane a quick brush with his paws before reaching into his belt pack and pulling out his pad. It was a motion I had seen him go through dozens of times. He held it out to us, a signature screen already on the display. "We've found evidence that would absolve any lassies. All you two have to do is agree." I snatched the pad out of Epilin's paws and scrolled up to read the documentation that he'd wanted to keep from us. That on its own caused both his and Cliver's ears to twitch, but they should have expected as much. It was legal entrapment 101. Present the signature first, as most wouldn't expend the effort to read something that apparently wasn't important. I would have been insulted by the attempt if it wasn't for the fact I would be a massive hypocrite to complain. From what I could see, the documentation seemed to be an employee timeline. I thought it might have been Calden's record for a second, but that didn't last. It was instead for someone named Balin. The name was familiar somehow, but I couldn't quite place my claw on it. It showed a record of them in the hospice wing, to record of them in the supply rooms, and finally to record of taking their break with the humans on their floor. I looked up and held Yipilin's gaze with my own, narrowing my eyes at him. What is this? The proof to absolve your client. He laughed. What else? Isn't it wonderful? My mind raced as quickly as the stiff breeze flowing between my ears. There was only one reason he would have brought me something like this. That, and my mind finally decided to connect the name to the only other instance of it I had seen. My tone was flat as I addressed his absurd suggestion. You want to pin the blame on the Yotel? Though pin is the wrong word, Yipilin soothed, shaking his mane. We are simply pointing out the means and opportunity for another to have committed the crime. Quite like you choose, or we not. Oh, don't you try to turn this around on us. They don't even fit any of the evidence. Searle protested after looking at the data over my shoulder. The culprit was a Kulshin. That was already determined by the surviving security evidence. And it was also determined that the Roman IV machines can control their flow, Yipilin added. While your witness proved that its low setting didn't allow for any lassie to have interfered at the proposed time, that setting lines up well for the floor visit of Balin. That, and it's already been established that the security footage was spotty at the time. Who's to say the feed is continuous and uninterrupted? Think about it, it would be trivial for them to hop in and out during a period of frozen feed, meaning their visit to the room wouldn't even be recorded. I wanted to growl, but I kept my voice flat and calm. And why do you think they are a better suspect than Kaldana? Given all the evidence, he has the highest chance of being our guy. Oh, do I really need to spell this out for you? Yipilin sighed, brushing his mane quickly. I could hear small sparks of static as he did so, the soundtrack to his arrogance. They are Yotel. It's a miracle that they haven't done this already. They probably thought it was a treatment. You have your case, and if you feel so inclined, you can argue an intentional death in his case. I breathed deeply. The atmosphere felt tense and alive as a realization hit me. This wasn't your idea, was it? Neither of you would have thought of this on your own. The words took them off balance, literally causing them to stumble slightly. Icarus recovered first and held my gaze. There are certain parties that wish this to be resolved quickly, ones that are willing to make it worth our while. We have found a true path to victory in this situation that would allow us both to succeed in our tasks. Is that not enough for you? I glared hard at Yipilin. A path that involves treading on the life of an innocent. I would be remiss not to clarify this. No, that is not enough for me. Don't give me that, you insufferable sticks, Yipilin spat. I don't know what trick you people did with that certificate, but even they know that medicine is a science instead of chance or magic leaves. Getting that Yotel removed would be a favor to everyone, both in this case and outside it. But they have nothing to do with this. Searle protested, we can't just throw them to the Oxer just because it makes this case easier on us. It's not barking RGHE. Searle is correct, I stated. This is not what I do, Yipilin, not anymore. You see this right here. It's exactly the kind of shit you did that made everything collapse. I did. He had the audacity to be shocked, taking an aggressive step towards me. I remember you being a full and willing participant. Actually, I remember you specifically heading some of those schemes. Don't you dare try and pile all the blame on me, especially for your own chicanery. I growled at him, baring my teeth and poking him with my claw as I lowered my head. I only did those things because you taught me how. Because you poisoned my mind with your insatiable lust for victory. Everything I did because of you, and I'm not about to let you corrupt me again. You should take the deal, Dickless huffed, stepping between us before things could get any more confrontational. Things could be made quite difficult if you refuse. And I don't just mean for you. Yehi Pillion agreed, huffing and smoothing his mane once more. A chorus of static crackles accentuated the motion far more than normal. They are anonymous, but we've been assured our interested client has resources. Vemric, to refuse this deal would mean serious cons. Vemric get the 729 Sudman Fragdeg unable to continue playback. CNDR commendator **. Recompiling. Error cleared. Resume transcription. Y/N. Playing. Ringing. My paws are off the ground. I'm moving forward, node backwards. Upwards. I tumbled. My vest tore. My hover transit. My safety. There was a ball of lightning crackling around it. Its body groaned, being pushed and pulled as if a giant hand was crushing it. My ears were ringing. My safety lurched. A crack. The ball retreated into it, collapsing like a dying star. In a flash, my hover transit broke apart, pieces ripping off and flying around the parking lot. A bumper impaled the ground beside my head. I was glued to the pavement. I heard nothing. The pressure against my body lifted as a crystalline silver sparkled the shine of the single warp plate that propelled my vehicle. It shot into the sky, plasma forming from its sheer speed as it rose free from the bounds of gravity for however long its charge or it itself lasted. I felt the shockwave pass me, and it was done. My safety was gone. Metal was strewn across the parking lot, some of it glowing white hot, and I laid upon the ground. What would mean serious consequences? I did this. You pillin' did this. You pillin' did this. You pillin' did this. You fucking bastard. I screamed, shooting up and scanning around for that living shitstain. When I saw his dirty mane on the ground, I immediately charged towards him and mounted his chest, scratching at his treacherous spaking face. You took everything from me. He cried out in pain as my claws streaked across his snout and eyes, leaving orange streaks as I made sure he knew a hundredth of the pain I was experiencing at this very instant. I felt something try to pry me off, so I slammed my airward back with as much force as I could muster. I was rewarded with a wet crack, so I returned to finally giving the horrible excuse for a sentient in front of me exactly what he deserved. Even after everything he took from me, my morals, my dignity, my virginity, my heart, he just couldn't help himself. He had to take the only thing that kept me safe from those that would do me harm. Now you're going to pay for it. All of it. I'm going to concave your... I can't move. I was being restrained by arms that were clearly far more muscular than mine, with fur coloration that matched the clivers. Of course the pillin'd new boy toy would try and protect him from the retribution he deserved after all he robbed me of. I tried to fight it, squirming, kicking, even trying to bite his arms to get him to let me finish what I started, but it was no use. Let me go. Let me go. I'm gonna make him pay. I mine. Oh, Searle's bleeding too. She was holding her paws over her mouth, orange blood dripping from between her fingers. I remembered the wet crack I'd heard. I'd done that, whatever had happened that was causing her bleeding. I found my struggling ceased as I realized what I was doing, what I had intended to do to Pillin. And it was just for my own satisfaction. My body felt limp as the anger ebbed from my system, replacing it. I felt something new, something so much worse. My rapid breaths hitched in my throat as my vision blurred. They started to hiccup and cough, tears streaming from my eyes as I was released from McCliver's grasp. I couldn't even collect the strength to hold myself up, collapsing in a heap on the ground as I wondered one thing. Why did the universe seem hellbent on punishing me for doing what was right? I fought for Enelasith and I was nearly killed for it. I defended Talin from wrongful imprisonment and any guarantee of safety for me was revoked. I opened my soul to another person and I was corrupted and cast aside for it. I didn't have anything anymore. I estranged myself from my parents to protect them from the political backlash of the Talin case. The only person I ever loved just tried to murder me on the whims of some slimy sedation, and the only safety I had left just exploded as the means to it. What did I do to deserve this? All I want is to help people. I want to expose the bad and help the hurt. Why can't I have good things happen for that? Why? There was a paw on my back. I could barely see through the tears, but there was orange coming from their face. I knew who it was and I couldn't bear to look at her right now. I tried to whisper out an apology, some insufficient pittance for whatever injury she sustained at my port, but it only came out as a pathetic whimper. I squeezed my eyes shut, just wanting to block out the universe. The universe that have forsaken me. I'm sorry. What? I should have known that something was wrong. Searle's voice continued, slightly muffled by her pause, but still legible nevertheless. My collar had a metal base. The electromagnetic disturbance must have been what made it slip out of T. There wasn't any time to get to your way, and we almost died because... No, not because of you. And not because of you, Pillin. No. I know who did this. Stop, I croaked out, my voice nearly blocked entirely from the mucus that was flooding my throat. From what I could see of Searle, she turned an eye to look at me. I couldn't tell for sure, but by how she had started to speak, I assumed she was crying as well. Not your fault. But, note, I said, coughing intensely as I dislodged a large chunk of mucus from my throat, depositing the icon of my self-pity on the debris-laden pavement. This wasn't your fault. It wasn't anyone's fault, not here. I need to ask you, Pillin, something. I wiped my eyes to clear the tears from then, proving my earlier theory right. Searle looked unsure of my request, but she reluctantly pointed over towards where I had charged toward earlier. There, Declivers was holding Pillin's head in his lap, orange flowing down his face from the numerous wounds I'd inflicted upon him in my fury. One of his eyes was swollen shut completely, be that from my attack or stray debris, I didn't know. As I approached, Declivers' hackle raised and he bared his teeth at me, rightfully so. Not a step closer, Venric, stay away from him. You already hurt him twice, you've done enough damage. I complied with the request, instead setting myself down on the pavement where I stood. My body ached from the effort, showing that perhaps I hadn't escaped as unscathed as I had first thought, but that didn't matter right now. I had let my hatred overrule me, and I knew I couldn't go back from that. But there was something I could do. Heep. Don't, Declivers growled at me, but I could see Pillin's ears flicker towards me. He was still breathing, thankfully, which meant that I could do what I planned to do. Something I never once imagined before this port, but it was something that needed to be said. And so I said it. I'm sorry. Ichlivers opened his mouth to cut me off, but my statement was over before a single decibel could leave it. He looked about as shocked as I felt at the fact I was doing this at all, but I wasn't done. I'm sorry that I blamed you for everything wrong with me. All right, you never forced me to do those things that I wanted to do good, but I let myself become addicted to the feeling of victory, so I. Silence hung in the air between us. The parts that had been glowing simmered down, mirroring my own emotions. I saw Searle limp towards me, the four of us gathered around in the middle of what was once my hover transit. Here now I saw that this wasn't some struggle of good versus evil that I liked to imagine things as. We were all just people hurt by the actions of others, and in particular one malicious actor. One that I intend to bring to justice. Then Ricky Pillin wheezed, reaching out towards me. Ichlivers and I shared a look, but I'd eventually made my way over next to him, clutching his paw in my own. Even now it reminded me of happier times, simpler times. The client, they, he took a raspy breath and spoke clearer. They told us to meet you here. It was meant for us, all of us. I know, I summarily replied. When I went to Caldana's house, I gave him my pad. He plugged in a peripheral attachment to provide a tentacle print, which must have uploaded some kind of virus that spread to my vehicle when I plugged it in. If I'm correct, it had seemed like he intended to delay the case indefinitely by way of eliminating those participating in it. Shit, I'm an idiot. The Pillin whistled darkly before coughing. The lines crossing his face had thankfully stopped bleeding as much by now, but he still looked weak. I had a feeling that he was the one giving us tips after you brought him up in the courtroom. Never look at the center of a gift basket, they said. You were receiving tips. Searle asked, her tone dumbfounded. That's why we chose that brutish human for witness, Pillin admitted. We were told that he'd be our best chance to prevent you from setting any lassie free. Some of the evidence didn't line up, but who else could it be? He shook his head, coughing again. What fools we were. You actually thought any lassie was guilty? I asked. Of course I wouldn't have prosecuted otherwise, Pillin answered, his swollen eye opening just enough to see it with. I know that you don't think highly of me, Venric, but I don't make a habit of taking on cases where the defendant is obviously innocent. D doesn't make for many victories, that. I suppose not, I mused. At least until you saw it was me who was defending. Pillin paused. He sighed. You're right. It didn't matter then. Her innocence didn't factor in at all. Only that I beat you, that I won. But I didn't want you dead. Not that. Are you still going to prosecute this poor? You might want to rest on account of I trailed off before I could recount just how many gashes I'd left on his face. I could ask the same of you, Pillin quipped. You're not exactly looking pristine either. I whistled softly at that. No, I guess I'm not. But there's still a murder to put away. I can't rest until that's done. Then I won't either, Pillin replied, managing to sit up slightly in Eclivers's arms. I've got a few questions I'd like to ask him myself. He's got a lot to answer for almost killing us. Satisfied that for once we'd be on the same sides, I stood. In that case, I suppose I'll see you again in the courtroom. I started to walk away from them, not wanting any further reminders of what once was. I saw Searle look between me and the two on the ground for a moment before deciding to follow me wherever I was going. But before I could get far, Pillin's voice sounded out once more. Venric, wait. I paused my step, turning back to look at him. I stood unevenly, my legs still feeling weak from everything that had happened. I sigh. You deserve more. I hope you find that simple. I couldn't muster anything more than an affirmative ear flick before continuing in my hobble. I limped away from Ichlivers, away from Pillin, and onward. Onward as I always did. Searle caught up with me, panting and looking to me for answers. Venric, what do we do now? I placed my leg on the mangled remains of a door and shoved it aside, approaching the split remains of my former home. I needed one thing, the thing that I had specifically gotten for its sturdiness. To be indestructible no matter what was done to me. It took a moment of searching, but I saw the orange plastic. My personal server, the black box for my cases and life. Kept isolated from all networks, even the hover transit I had plugged my pad into. I pulled off the bent and broken metal that had covered it and checked it over. It had the light. It was intact. I had all my information. Now. I growled, now we get the guilty parties and rake them over the coals. Legal Legends 25. Memory Transcript Self-Determined Investigative Lawven. Date Standardized Human Time November 18th, 2136. I walked behind Vemic, doing my best to keep up with his limping pace. He had the surviving server slung over his back by a couple of straps, marching forward with a determination that was honestly, it was a bit scary. He had only stuck around the wreckage long enough for the emergency services to arrive and dress his injured leg, but he refused to be taken to the hospital. He really think the police wouldn't find anything? I asked, concerned for his state of being. I'll do one better than think, I'm certain, Venric huffed agitatedly, continuing to limp along. This server was isolated from the vehicle and its computer was quite thoroughly destroyed. Even if they found the remnants of my datapad, the police are only just now learning how to properly trace cybercrime through human teachers. There was only one person who would have been able to do it with any sense of reliability, and I'm not about to drag them into this. If I'm not mistaken from recent headlines, they have their own issues to worry about. Note, if we're taking down Kaldanov, we've got to do it in the courtroom, ourselves. But shouldn't we have told them our suspicions on who did it? I asked, my own muscles aching from the abuse they had just endured. Meanwhile, I didn't Pillin or Eklev say they thought it was Kaldanov either. We told the police the explosion was malicious. Why couldn't we have pointed them in the right direction? Because they would have claimed it wasn't their job. That actually made me stop walking. Bemerick noticed my surprise and continued with a regretful sigh. On data, the police are supposed to investigate crimes both non-violent and violent. That would include things like murder or attempted murder when such events occur. But in practice, such extreme violence is usually seen as predatory action and is thus handed over to exterminators to handle. I grimaced but pressed on regardless. Okay, I know you have a history with them, but since this is their specialty, shouldn't we have them investigate anyway? This is serious. If we had been just a little closer, our names would be on his victim list as well. Even if we got officers that were legitimately wishing to help, their skills in proper investigation are severely lacking the Venric side. It's barely better than finding an animal den to set on fire or harassing someone they think has PD into getting a diagnosis test. And with how Kaldanov played us, people who knew he was guilty from the get-go, he would easily be able to soothe and flatter just about any officer that approaches him without so much as an inconvenience. Note, if we want him to be taken down for everything they've done, it will be in court this poor. Al felt my ear bases press against my head as I lost the will to try and keep what little perk they had left. He was right, I wished he wasn't, but he was. We needed to do this ourselves somewhere Kaldanov couldn't flee or manipulate his way out of. We just needed to reach the jail Enelasa is being held in and inform her of what we found. We can do it. Speaking of that meeting, I cleared my throat to get Fenric's attention again. Since we are going to be meeting with our client again, do you at least want to do some light grooming to get rid of that unique mane do you currently have? Fenric turned his head towards me, the eyes narrowing as he smirked. What do you, don't you think the exploded look is a wonderful fashion statement? Statement was certainly a word one could use. The explosion had caused the soot to stick to his fur and blow his mane back from his head, the heat just intense enough to singe his wool and make it stick out in its spiked positioning. It was like he had it styled up in black spikes. For some reason, it brought to mind a bird that had just been through fire, just an absurd look. I suppose if the statement you want to broadcast is that you're constantly facing the wind, feel free, I deadpanned, but emotion soon returned to my voice when I realized what we had just done. Hold, how are you able to joke so soon after what just happened? Easily. He whistled. Cause if I didn't laugh at the thoughts of what I want to do to Kaldanov, I'm pretty sure I'd be screaming not to stop anytime soon. Yeah, that checks out. I kept myself professional and followed my overly stressed and sub-blackened boss the rest of the way to the jail. I quietly tipped the taxi driver a little extra for the mess. Hopefully their bosses don't complain too much about the soot marks on the seats. The receptionist was rather shocked at our appearances as we entered, stammering as we approached. By the stars. WH, what happened to you two? With Vemric and Serl, Vemric stated with a surprising amount of positivity. We're here to see our client Enelasi. I didn't know what it was, but the way that Fenric's ears and tail signaled positivity made me feel like I was next to an Arxa. The receptionist blinked, then sensing the hesitation, Fenric clapped his paws together and took my data pad from my hands. Over, also we have a witness that has been sworn to testify today. If you wouldn't mind, would you please schedule a couple of officers to go to this address and give an escort? I hope their presence eases his nerves. The receptionist, after a moment's delay, tapped their own pad to mine and flicked his ears in agreement to Fenric. With the task done, my pad was returned. Enelasi Willoth, they'll be in the interview room shortly. You two may enter. Fenric didn't wait a second longer before walking past the receptionist, giving little more than a cursory tail flick as acknowledgement. Before I could follow, the receptionist grabbed my arm. My ear bases raised in alarm, but I didn't pull away when I saw their worried expression. Sorry, but just, they gestured their head toward Fenric. Is he okay? No, I answered truthfully, but it's not something that can be helped right now. If you want to help, you'll make sure Enelasi is there as quickly as possible. Please. The receptionist flicked his ears affirmatively and released my arm, standing to escort Enelasi to the room for our final meeting before what I feared would be the make-or-break trial. If we failed to prove Kaldanov's guilt here, it would throw our entire thesis into question and force us into a full trial. That left plenty of time for the slippery caution elder to scheme up some other way to absolve himself, and truthfully, I don't know if Emmerich's mental state could sustain another blow like had just been dealt. I was still trying to process the entire thing as had been described by Verrick. I should probably catch up to him. I moved back towards the interrogation rooms, finding the hallways empty. I wondered for a moment which one would be ours, but given the general lack of eventful occurrences here, I figured the end of the hall would be my best bet. Opening the door, I was rewarded with the ridiculous visage of my boss facing away from the opening, the portable server set upon the ground. Hate, I greeted, knocking on the door frame shortly before to announce my presence fully. He didn't quite respond, giving an ear flick as I entered. I pulled back the chair next to his and took my seat, the both of us waiting for the staff to give us an audience with Enelasi. I didn't want to pry, but from what I could see of his face in my periphery, his expression was unusually bland, the rage I knew was simmering beneath the surface perfectly concealed. After a short while of us sitting in silence, I thought I ought to at least try and talk. So what exactly are we going to say to her? That we found the guilty party, he said flatly, obviously trying his best to control his temper. And that she will need to prepare herself for whatever schemes he tries to whip up on the stand. There's no telling what lies he might conceive of. But what schemes could he even use? I asked. He already played his part and it failed. Well, tentacle whatever. What more could he do? I can think of a couple of things, he huffed, mostly relying upon the fact she's a good person who would sacrifice herself for others. We need to assure her that no matter his threats or his hints, she can rely upon us to make everything end up well with complete and absolute certainty. I could see the value in that, and before I had a chance to ask him to elaborate, a buzz sounded from the other side of the interrogation room. Just as had been the previous pour, which felt like a lifetime ago, explosions will do that, I suppose. Enelasi stepped into the chamber, followed by a guard who closed the door behind them. At first his expression was happy, but it quickly deteriorated upon seeing our conditions. Oh my, are you two okay? We're fine, Venric answered before I could so much as take a breath, just a little banged up. Nothing that you need to worry about. Rather than set Enelasi at ease, her face scrunched up and she pointed an accusatory tentacle at him. Absolutely not. You're leaning to one side and wincing slightly, your ribs are probably bruised. Not to mention possible burns going by that hairdo asterisk to asterisk, and you, she said whilst pointing to me, have obvious signs of blunt force trauma to your snout. Tell me what happened now. Venric and I looked between one another, seeing as how the blow to my snout wasn't technically related to the event that transpired. However, not wishing for Venric to further degrade himself after the show of an apology he made deep illimed, I opted to speak instead. There was an issue in tracking down the suspect we talked about during the last trial, Caldana. Our transportation malfunctioned and nearly killed us, but we escaped unharmed, mostly, at least. Enelasi's skin paled at the knowledge of our predicament and she pressed her tentacles against the translucent separation wall. Oh stars, I'm so sorry to hear about that. I really don't know what I did to this Caldana guy to make him so determined to see me get put away, but I don't want you two killed over it. If there's too much danger involved, I could... No, Venric forcefully said, proving his concerns about Enelasi conflating the actions of other with her own fault correct. This is not your fault, nor is it your fault that you were falsely imprisoned here. Try as he might to have been rid of us, Caldana failed, and he made the crucial mistake of agreeing to show up in court. We survived his gambit, now it's on us to ensure he doesn't escape ours. You have a plan? Enelasi asked, uncertainly, her frills folding back with concern. Most of one, Venric admitted. I can't get too specific, but it will rely upon him being a complete lying bastard in court and you trusting us enough to get you through this without further issues. Rest assured, I do trust you, but I... No, listened, Venric placed his paw upon the glass as if bracing himself as he spoke. This man is a talented manipulator. He had me completely mentally disarmed in minutes, to the point I didn't even complain when he plugged my pad directly into his own computer. He is the kind of dangerous person that will aim for weak points and strike with ferocity. He will try to make you act like he wants with his words what he says on the stand, so you cannot let him get to you. Enelasi recoiled slightly as Venric raised his voice, but I recognized the necessity of his words' harshness. I, like him, hadn't even suspected any kind of foul play, even as my collar was being pulled in by the magnetic distortions caused by the malfunctioning reactor. As much as I didn't want to scare Enelasi, I was afraid that being afraid of him was the only way to ensure that she understood the magnitude of the situation. He's right, Enelasi, this man is extremely dangerous. And you're certain that you can prove his guilt? She asked. Venric took a deep breath. He is arrogant, careful but arrogant, he is not as smart as he thinks he is. He missed a camera that was still working in the hallway. He was unable to hide his true nature from a patient who is mostly in their own world. He only swiped the vending machine drives after we had gotten copies. And his plan to kill us didn't account for me parking my vehicle farther away from our meeting point than he had anticipated. Meeting. Enelasi interrupted, what do you mean? All right, she didn't know. Pillion and Eclavis, the of the prosecuting attorneys, called us to try and make a deal, Ike explained. A ways into the meeting, our transportation exploded. The blast was likely meant to take them out as well if we had parked in front of the tree like we were supposed to. And probably deflect blame as well. Venric huffed as Yupilin's pad would have had data implicating someone named Balin in the human's murder. Suspicion would have likely turned on them as attempting a cover-up, completely absolving Caldana of.
Wait, Balin. Endelassie asked.
Yes, Balin, I responded, my interest piqued by the tone of voice she used.
Do you know them?
I do, yes, then Elassie answered. He's the new head of medicine at the XGC branch I was working at. How would what evidence could there even be against him?
The head of medicine.
Venric and I both looked at one another with surprise. We both knew that they were an employee, but someone that high up in the chain.
As a Yotel no less.
The data I was shown had them listed as a medical manager, Venric slowly replied. They would, but they just recently got promoted to the poor before everything happened, actually, Elassie explained. I remember talking to them to congratulate them on the promotion. I had applied for the position as well, but seeing as how I was lacking in my knowledge of non-mammalian intracranial anatomy, I ended up being the second choice. I tried to say something, but no words came out. Thoughts raced through my mind as I thought about what this could mean for the case. We knew that Caldana was a vision physician, but the XGC, did this mean that he was trying to undermine their decision-making process? Was Enelassie just collateral damage in some plot to cause controversy for the new head of medicine? That is interesting information indeed, Venric mused, the tone of his voice giving away that the same questions were swirling around in his mind as well. Once we both confirmed we were on the same page, we looked back at Enelassie as Venric asked another question. Did you at any point see Caldana's name on the application as well? Enelassie was lost in thought for a moment, but when her frill started wavering, we knew she had realized what we had.
I did, yes. What is, do you think that Caldana could have?
We don't know anything for certain yet. I did my best to soothe and manage expectations, but given that he is currently the most likely suspect, it gives him a plausible motive that we hadn't yet considered.
And just to be sure, you had no prior interaction with him at all, correct?
Again, common name, but unless he's my uncle, none whatsoever, Enelassie confirmed, her body language clearly frazzled by the new information.
But just for a promotion. It's not even like they'd be in charge of the branch, it's just a prestige position that would allow them jurisdiction over treatments allowed to be performed at that particular branch.
It's nothing worth killing over.
And you were able to apply for that position as a nurse?
I asked, trying to glean any new information I could before the final trial in a claw. That sounds like a responsibility that they'd entrust to someone with something of a more senior status.
Oh, it is, Enelassie assured me. The only reason I was considered was due to my years of service as a field medic for the Exterminator Corps. Academically, I was only rated for nursing, but seeing as how I've done just about everything short of brain surgery on a duty, and I was eligible for the position anyways. It really wasn't a surprise that Balin was awarded it. They've been serving this branch almost since Len was inducted into the Federation. That confirmed it in my mind. Everything up to this point had been a horrible ruse to eliminate two threats to his possible promotion at once. It was unlikely that he tried to lock away another Kolshind, but a Yotel.
Ripe harvest. He just needed someone to blame at first, someone who obviously couldn't have done it, to prime the path for Balin's hasty prosecution. And if we can't prove that Caldana is the real culprit now, we'll be playing right into his tentacles.
I leaned forward. Do you know any reason why Balin would still be listed as their previous position?
Enelassie replied instantly.
Well, yeah, they're a Yotel. Many of the higher-ups in the XGC still don't think they can do as much. It's why I congratulated him that he was able to get the heads at this branch see his value. Someone controlling the public staff listing could be in full denial and claim that they haven't been promoted.
Or someone with the computer skills to do it.
I turned to Venric.
You don't think that's it, do you?
That Enelassie was a convenient target for a failed plan.
We have yet to see if it failed, Venric said, massaging his temples.
The evidence, if you can even call it that, against Balin still exists. If we can't conclusively prove that Caldana is behind the attacks, that will leave us to move to a full trial, and the humans will want someone to blame. If they can't do so with Caldana, there's a definite possibility they will with Balin, species alliance or not.
I huffed in annoyance at his correctness. The last thing we needed right now was to make the Venal courts appear incompetent in the face of a new diplomatic agreement. The stakes of the trial had just managed to increase significantly from only an innocent woman being convicted of a crime she didn't commit to the potential of significant political fallout if we failed to implicate her framer. If my ears were capable of pressing against my head, they certainly would be. For now, they dropped lazily by the sides of my skull as they always did, providing one less avenue for me to show my concern at the situation.
Well, I guess we'd better make sure that it's Caldana behind bars this poor then.
Venric flicked his ears in approval, turning back towards our client. We will be seeing you at the courthouse then. Unless there's anything more you wished to discuss with us, I believe we have a defense to formulate. Enelasi met Venric's eyes, then mine. With the stern frill splay, she only offered one sentence, her voice steely. Make sure he doesn't get out for a long time. Both Venric and I tail started to wag at her determination, as that was exactly what we intended to do. Venric picked up his serve and slung it over his shoulder, his own voice set with a tone of confident hardness. Don't worry, we'll make sure of it. With that, we stood to make our leave. Enelasi was taken back to her cell by the guard for what would hopefully be the last time as we exited the interrogation room, leaving us with only one task left: proving her innocence and figuring out how we'd actually get to the courthouse at this claw. Okay, two things. Legal Legends 26. Memory Transcript, Femric City Lorven. Date Standardized Human Time, November 18th, 2136. I stood confidently in the courtroom, straightening my vest. My pores had ceased adding streaks upon it by now, though that was because most of the soot had already been transferred upon it, a fact of which certainly hadn't gone unnoticed by the courtroom. I could hear the confused murmurs and comments upon my appearance, even a number of people making jokes about me crawling down a chimney for evidence. There was even the classic absurdist somewhere in the stands behind me letting out a bleat of play ball. Probably hoped it would break the tension with a laugh. But it was the hammering of Justice Keiter that broke the tension instead. Order. This session will come to order. The crowd fell silent with one final comment from someone saying this is so exciting. I had to agree with them on that point, there would be quite the testimony this poor. Epillion and Ecliver straightened themselves behind their stand opposite ours. They had both actually taken the time to clean up, seeing as their transport hadn't been completely decimated by foul actions. Epillion even looked to have boss and a quick main trim. He always was particular about his appearance, so him trying something new while cleaning up after a near-death experience made a bit of sense to me. Surprisingly, Ecliver's was the one who looked nervous, shifting uncomfortably on his paws and swaying uncertainly. But he was comforted when Epillion curled his tail around theirs and the former soldier stood straight, just in time for the court to formally begin again. This court session is now reconvened, Keiter declared. Relating to the subject of the new suspect, I open the floor to the findings. Accusation. Yes, Your Honor, Epillion bowed. We have been able to find that Caldener is on the payroll of the XGCs and had been employing his services at the particular branch in question at the time of the murder. We have prepared our case to address these facts during testimony and examination. Keiter flicked his ears forward and turned his attention to me. And the defense. We have met with Caldener and have called him to testify, I responded. He shall be here momentarily with his escort. Understood, he replied dignifiedly, but even he couldn't resist the urge to comment on my appearance. He coughed confused before addressing me once more. I'm sorry, but before I call the defendant to the stand, what happened to you two? In the interest of moving past this debacle, I put on a positive performance. I would have time to process my emotions afterwards. Enelasi's innocence and tearing down Caldener was the priority right now. And that meant no distractions. We had some difficulties in getting the witness in. They had a more explosive reaction than we initially expected, I stated, hoping in the back of my mind that Keiter and his luxurious mane would understand my meaning. We shall be requiring new transport after this port, but it is nothing that will impede our abilities in trial. We shall be fine, Your Honor, Searle agreed. We are ready. After a moment's hesitation, the judge signaled for Enelasi to be brought in. She was still in her restraint jacket, but I noticed that the belts were all set at looser positions given by how her tentacles hung more relaxed within their sleeves. She was seated next to us and greeted us warmly with her fins. I'm not going to let her down, not after everything we've gone through to get here. Enelasi, Keiter stated, directly addressing her, do you still maintain your innocence in the face of the accusation? If sufficient evidence of Caldener's involvement is not uncovered this port, you will be liable to attend court again, which could result in your conviction. In light of this information, High Majesty Alinea is willing to offer you and your legal counsel a negotiable plea deal in exchange for your confession. My ears raised in shock at Judge Keiter's remarks, as did Epillion and Ecliver's. I am certain Searle's would as well, should she have been physically capable of doing so. I glanced up at the stand, spotting the Harchin Magister staring down at us and awaiting our decision with a sterile glare. I knew then and there that somehow, someway, Caldener had managed to influence her as well, trying in vain one last time to turn the tide of this legal battle in his favor. He still thinks he can get away with it. The nerve. That will not be necessary, Your Honor, I assured. I am of the belief that there is sufficient evidence to not warrant a plea deal for a matter of guilt. Once the witness enters the chamber and the trial can fully begin, I am certain that the High Magister, yourself, and the members of the audience will be of the same mind. Judge Keiter quickly looked between myself and Alinea, doing his due diligence to ensure that she didn't have any objections to that information. After a moment, her scales changed to a warmer hue, indicating that we were clear to proceed. So be it, Kaita responded to me without a second's more delay. In that case, the trial is now in session. Please enter the courtroom, witness Kaldana. The clerk flicked their tail affirmatively and disappeared into the waiting room to retrieve the caution of the call. The process took a bit longer than I expected, likely due to the fact that Kaldana had banked on his previous trick scaring us into non-retaliation. However, he had sorely mistaken Searle and I for those with weak wills, the mistake he was about to pay dearly for. It was a sight for sore eyes when I finally spotted him enter the stand, clad in the same lab coat he had been wearing earlier in the port, as well as sporting that same human-designed cap he had been wearing during our first meeting. Didn't even change his outfit. With the final step out of the way, Judge Kaita stomped on his silencing block to ensure silence before speaking. The witness has been procured. Accusation, you may begin the testimony process followed by your examination. The Clivers began stepping out from behind their podium, but he was quickly stopped by Pillin. The two met eyes and exchanged a quick wordless conversation, one which resulted in a quick tail curling and a Cliver stepping aside for Pillin to exit their podium instead. He sauntered over in his usual style, the new parted fur trim suiting him well. Kaldana, do you swear to the court that you will tell only the truth in your testimony today? The elderly Kolshin let out a small chuckle, his disarming demeanor obviously not meant for those of us in the know. But of course, I have no reason to lie about such a serious matter. Why, hi, do you swear? Pillin repeated shortly, obviously not looking to play games after nearly being killed by the Setitin's earlier stunt. Kaldana's frills flared momentarily with indignation, too difficult to discern emotion crossing his face, but he just as quickly motioned warmly in affirmation. Very well. Please recite events as you recall them. Certainly, Kaldana responded. However, even before he began speaking, I could see something off about Enelasi. Her facial features were scrunched in deep thought as her frills wavered slightly. Then suddenly her eyes widened in shock and she blurted out. Uncle. What? I turned an eye toward Enelasi. Her elongated pupils had constricted as they stared down at the elderly Kolshin on the stand. Uncle Kaldana. It's you. Her uncle. The court instantly let out bleats of conversation and surprise at the apparent revelation regarding his relation to her. Thankfully, Judge Kaita swiftly took control of the situation with three consecutive commanding thumps against his silencing block. Order. Order in the court. Kaldana, do you have any relation to the defendant that has not yet been disclosed? The old man's fin stood firmly out at the line of questioning. Of course, in the interest of keeping his composure, most likely he curled his tentacles in front of himself and gave a bow. I am quite afraid I am. It comes to no surprise to me that Enelasi didn't know I was here. I have been keeping my distance from her after all. He took a deliberate look at Enelasi with one of his eyes flicking ahead fins in a smug display as he continued his monologue. Though my original reasoning was to avoid any potential accusations of nepotism upon her promotion, it appears that there were better reasons to avoid her. I hadn't wanted to believe it, but it would seem as though she was quite the same as her Dawn Creek compatriots. I should have seen the warning signs. I have borne witness to her growth. Why, even as a young child, she was always so eager to join the exterminators and burn. Excuse me, Kaldana, I interrupted. I'm afraid you were not brought here as a character witness. And I'm not about to have you slandering my client. Rather, you were brought in as a person of interest. Oh? He asked, keeping his kind old man demeanor up in front of the court. I don't believe you will find too much interesting about me. My days of intrigue have long since passed. Despite his kindly appearance, I could tell he was hiding something. The way his tentacles curled in on themselves long past any display of politeness. But what? Wait. Please, sir, I requested, hoping that my memory had served me right. Would you remove your headwear when addressing the court? Such an article feels quite rude, especially considering its origin and that of the victim in this incident. In truth, I didn't quite know how to describe the sudden sound that escaped his mouth at that moment. It was like he had been physically struck by my demand, which confirmed that I was on the right track. Ahem. I don't believe that is truly necessary. It is. Cliver slammed his paws on their desk and stood, the sound echoing through the wooden-clad courtroom as he marched over to Kaldana. Upon arrival, he held the old man's gaze and unspoken battle raging between them in the span of but a few seconds. He looked conflicted in relation to Kaldana's thus far uncharacteristic cool demeanor, resembling a common scared Venlil, if only for a moment. Resolve just as quickly filled him though, and he snatched the hat right off Kaldana's head with a swift motion the elderly Kolshin was unable to react in time to. Respect the court, he stated firmly, walking back to the accusation stand as uneven thumps sounded from his prosthetic leg. Kaldana was frozen in place, and even aside from shocked, it was quite clear why. What I had suspected was true for all to see, a blue owl-shaped mark with a little circle on one end stamped clearly across his forehead. The exact same one that appeared upon Enelas's, just as she had admitted during our first interrogation. I saw Judge Kaita's eyes widen in surprise with the shifting colors of High Majesty Yelenu seated behind them. quite the distinguishing mark there, Caldener, I smugly stated. It is almost exactly like the mark on my client. His eyes flickered with rage at us and then he relaxed. He looked annoyed, turning his attention to Eclivus. A thank you so much for exposing to the world the rather embarrassing circumstances of my birth. Clearly, since my niece doesn't see the need to tend her marked, it must have been obvious that I did not either. So thank you for forcing me to display the scar showing that I was forcibly ripped from my mother's womb, having done so only now that I have run out of my Afon Lilac Care creams to make it look the slightest bit pleasant and presentable. Is he really trying to deflect with such an obviously flimsy excuse? It is quite clear what is going on in all your minds, Caldener continued. This case isn't unknown to me or anyone else within the hospital, I would venture. You believe that as both I and my niece share this mark, the one used to identify her, then it must have truly been me perpetrating the crime. I'm correct in that assumption, am I not? He was prepared for this. Wait, why am I surprised? Of course he'd have done some mental preparation. A breathed out slowly, his marking was too visible and he couldn't have been wearing hats until the human started appearing more commonly planetside. He would have had to have thought that it was possible for someone to point to him as having that mark even while he implemented his out of sight, out of mind plan, which meant I just needed to press on. Going by your tone, it's clear that you think that assumption is incorrect. It would be quite natural for me to say so, he said, his fin tail tapping against the tile. But I also know you need more than just appearance to prove a crime. Which he thinks we don't have. Paf. It doesn't change the fact that such similarities make you a person of interest, I remind him. However, you are correct in that appearances alone do not a guilty verdict alone make. In the interest of upholding the law, further evidence is still required. Please relay to the court what your activities were during the claw of the murder. Oh well, I was giving a diagnosis on a Venlil about getting ocular surgery to remove and transplant a set of dead retinas in their eyes. I went to the inventory room to take stock of the available ocular saline, and when I came out I found my niece had been arrested for murder. And can you verify this? They questioned him. Do you have the records and patient reports to present to the court? Caldener's tail wagged smugly behind him. You expected me to have enough notice to procure such documentation. I was only notified of my testimony earlier this poor. Quite simply, the burden of proof in this situation lies upon you. If you believe I speak falsely, it's up to you to prove me wrong. That was absolutely correct. He was technically still just a witness, not the one actually under trial at this point in time. Protocol held that their testimonies were taken for granted as accurate, with leeway given for errors in memory. Had Epilion and Nickliff has not been actually allied with us in this endeavor, they would have called our folly out to the judge by our second sentence. We had to prove somehow that he was lying about his whereabouts in order to justify our pointed questioning. But how would we do that? Well then, Sir, ventured as our witness, can you please describe what you had observed while you were in the inventory room? I can. Caldener hesitated, clearly not expecting her to attempt an elaboration of his series of events. I don't see why that would be of any relevance. Oh, it's fully relevant, I built upon Searle's line of questioning. The methanol bag that was used in the murder was marked as missing from the inventory room, which you yourself said you were inside. So, if you would please testify to what else he might have seen there. Caldener subtly winced. Ayot, absolutely. He cleared his throat, trying to keep up his kindly facade. A was rather focused on finding the ocular saline, and it was fairly easy to do. Though now that I think about it, as I was counting the saline, I remember seeing the brown fur of a yacht moving around the chemical racks. That was quite strange, as there hasn't been any of them approved for such actions. Rather unusual now that I think about it, though they left quickly, leaving me alone in the room. Searle turned an eye toward me, disbelieving that he was still attempting to throw suspicion on the yacht. The wool on Epilion's neck rose as well, giving confirmation in my mind about the connection. However, while the others were focused on that, I was interested in the last statement. Alone in the room. I asked, so according to you there would be nobody to corroborate your presence there. He laughed, that's where I was, so that's all I can really say. It's unfortunate I had nobody around to say I was, but that is quite the truth. Oh, and what if there was someone there at the time? Caldener blinked. I beg your pardon. I said, what if there was someone who could corroborate your presence? I asked, or rather someone who could corroborate your absence. Someone who would have been in the very room as you at the very same time as you. Who do you mean, the yacht? He stuttered, I can't say I know who exactly they are, but if you're requesting another recess to find them. They don't mean the yacht, I interrupted. They mean someone who has already made quite an impression upon this court and its audience. Someone who is both studious and exact, someone would certainly not leave the presence of a caution in their domain unmentioned. A spoke with a flourish, loving the absolute confusion upon his face. Searle rose, her ears held straight as she asked the piercing question. I'll put aside the theatrics of my partner. Where was Stuxit at the time you were in the room? His mouth open, closed, it was moving but unable to form words for a full 3 seconds. Who?
Gotcha. Stuxit, the head of inventory, I prompted, trying to keep the smugness out of my voice. He was busy managing inventory during the event. You know his job, so it's entirely likely you would have seen him if you were in the inventory room at the same time.
Hey, don't, there aren't any managers named Stuxit.
What are?
Taldana tried to argue, but I cut him off, already knowing what his following reaction would be.
Really? You mean you took notice of Yotl, but you didn't notice the White Suvkit working hard to keep everything organized?
His expression changed in an instant.
A Suvkit? He blurted out. His tone was one of sheer indignation, as if I had claimed the planet was nothing but a hollow ring. The Xeno Medical Grand Complex, the pride of the Federation medicine on this planet. They wouldn't put the management of life-saving medicine and equipment to a Suvkit.
Perhaps not according to you, but the hospital records show another story, I continued, pressing, pulling up the employment records on the screen.
Even though Kaldun's name didn't appear once on there was another name that did. As you can see here, Stuxit has been employed by this branch of the XDC for nearing 5.778193 years, exceeding your tenure there by a wide margin.
Kaldun scoffed at the information, but even the most blinded by hatred couldn't deny that Stuxit's memorization skills were second to none.
All that would be needed to destroy what this caution said was for him to be called up and clarify for the record he was present in the room. With the show he had given a last port, if he said he was there at the time of the incident, it was more than likely that was the case.
Caldenat, on the other hand, had shown himself almost entirely unaware of the actual stuffing of the branch he occupied, meaning that not only had we cast doubt on his testimony, but had also avoided any implications of actually innocent parties.
We're on the right track. Now to prove his guilt once and for all.